Since Reggie Fils-Aimé departed Nintendo, he's been shattering the dreams of many fandoms. Yours truly was gutted, but not surprised to hear that Nintendo doesn't see the value in investing in Mother 3, the Game Boy Advance sequel to Mother 2, known in the West as Earthbound. The good news is, this is only what he knows about since his time at Nintendo. Feelings change, thoughts develop, and time keeps ticking. Oh, and tonight's story is about F-Zero. Put on your fandom dreaming hard hats and tune in for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, as they discuss the story and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are back live once again with episode number 914 of our show for tonight, May the 15th of 2022. My name is Rob Roberts, and I'm joined via the magic of Discord by Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers.
Hey.
Hello, hello. How are you doing?
That's a loaded question.
Hope you're feeling better this week than last week.
My head is, and then I probably broke my toe last night.
Oh, no. So. All right, I want to talk about your weekend a little more in a minute.
More about that.
Of course, I want to introduce Techmaster Loki. Hi, Loki.
Hello.
Hi, what is the game playing behind you tonight live on Twitch?
That's because, weird.
Oh, here's my plug I always do, because we do a tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network. That's VOG Network, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. Again, that's twitch.tv/VOG Network, where a lot of viewers tonight are surprised to find out that I have no hair under the hat. So usually I wear a hat when we're doing the show. I'm not wearing one this week. And everybody's like, Rob looks different. Yeah, because I'm not wearing a hat. And you're like, oh.
You have a very symmetrical head, Rob.
Well, actually, I would say the headphones really bring it out. When I'm wearing these big old headphones, they kind of bring that out. I usually don't like being bald because I feel like it isn't symmetric. But thank you.
I know people who are very lumpy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You do not look lumpy.
Well, thank you. Thank you. DJ Rama S in chat says, Rob is a sexy Lex Luthor. Well, thank you. Except Lex Luthor is what I've been calling the guy who just bought Twitter. So I don't want to be associated with that guy. That guy's a piece of work. Anyway, Loki, what's...
Remember who it was, though, that compared you to Vin Diesel, but you?
Oh, that was on Twitter. Yeah, yeah.
I would have been insulted.
Nah. I look at where
like that man is not attractive.
From.
I'm sorry.
Well, somebody replied to my thing. So I posted a selfie and I was like, hi, bald. And somebody replied to it putting hi, graying. And I was like, is that supposed to be shady? Because A, you've never posted a selfie. So if you want me to drag you, I'm happy to do it. But B, I don't know, like Anderson Cooper's graying and he's kind of hot. So like, what's wrong with graying? Gray's cool. So gray is
we call that a silver fox.
Gray is a sign of intelligence and maturity.
Gray is a sign that your melanin levels have decreased in your hair follicles.
Anyway, welcome. Speaking of maturity, welcome to the video game show that we've been doing for coming up on 20 years next month. And Loki, you look like you have a very mature game playing in the background behind you there. What is that? It's like I know I've played this before, and I can't remember the name of this.
It is. I didn't know what to pick, so I just did arcade long plays, and then I saw this on the list. It's Ninja Clowns.
I think this is one of those like MAME games I've played just for the name. I was like, what the hell is this? And I played it for like 5 minutes, and I was like, it's not very good. All right.
It appears to be a beat 'em up with clowns. So
that sounds frightening and terrible.
Unless you're the one beating up the clowns.
No, I don't even want to look at one.
I think it's like looks like you're a clown beating up other things.
Interesting.
Perhaps.
All right, let's talk about something that's a brighter topic. Dark Sakura, you were on a trip this weekend, right? Sort of. Not really a trip.
I mean, the place is 30 minutes away.
A jaunt, a skip, a hop and a skip.
So I was in Lodi. Yeah,
I'm
and
sorry
I know
to
people
hear
are
that.
Like, what's in Lodi?
Wine.
Lodi's where good wine comes from, though.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, speaking of wine, it was at the Wine Festival Center or whatever they call it, their convention center. But we had the triumphant return of Golden State Pinball Festival. And I went on Friday for a good portion of it. Friday starts later in the afternoon. So I went and played a bunch of stuff and hung out with Dan. He was on the channel Elk Grove Pinball here on Twitch, and doing commentating on the various tournaments that they were running. He was actually on today's tournament, and I kept hosting it. That was pretty fun. We went to a dinner also that night in memory of a member of the community and a friend of ours who died very suddenly this past year. And his wife was there, and you know, she made cookies for everybody. It was nice. I didn't eat them because they had raisins in them. Overall, I had a really good time. I went again last night, and I was supposed to be there today for the last day, except in doing my laundry and trying to kick the door open, I kicked the door frame. And yeah, last night my toe was purple and swollen. Today it is actually toe colored, but it's still pretty swollen. And it had actually swollen into my wrapping last night, and it hurts so much. So now I have it. I mean, what are you going to do for a broken toe? You know, the doctor's going to say, okay, it's broken, immobilize it, here's some drugs. Except I can't take any of the drugs because of other stuff I'm on. I taped it. I put gauze around it to give it a cushion. I taped the two toes together with KT tape. I've taken Tylenol. I've taken a muscle relaxer. I'm good.
I'm not laughing at the fact you broke your toe because that sucks, but I'm laughing because my assumption was at some point during the weekend you kicked a pinball machine or something.
No.
I didn't think you were doing it with laundry. Or I thought, oh, maybe they had an Ultracade machine there and she kicked it out of ceremony.
It was my pinky toe, Brad.
That's no fun. That's no fun.
And actually, I think the one next to it was pretty tender too. But so I'm just going to keep them taped up and let them heal and... But as a result, I didn't want to be on my foot all day playing pinball as much as I wanted to go back and play the star of the show, in my opinion, which was they had Weird Al's Museum of Natural Hilarity, and I played a lot of it. I love it. Except it has the same problem with P3 tables that it always has. First of all, this one had the animatronic with the squeeze box and everything. It was really cool. It is a very fun table with many, many modes. Like, you actually, when you hit a mode, you get to choose between two of them. Like, I did Weasel Stomping Day and Harvey the Wonder Hamster, and then Dan got a choice between Alsuya and what was the other one? He got Word Crimes, which I wish he had done Word Crimes, but whatever. It was really fun, but my problem with P3 tables is that because it's a smoother surface, that it doesn't have the same drag that a traditional wooden play field has. That sometimes the ball physics are affected weirdly. Like, the ball will sometimes move slower than I anticipate it moving, and sometimes it will just move like lightning. The other problem I have with P3 flippers, and this one was better than, like, when I played Lexi Lightspeed a while back, is that they seem to have a wider gap and a slight bit of a delay. But now with this one, though, I don't know what they did, but they had, I guess, 3D printed an extension for the flipper buttons, and there were three buttons. I only played with, you know, the ones I reached normally. But, I mean, it's got a very involved play field for, you know, a P3. You've got, I mean, still you have that
question from
open...
chat on what a P3 is.
Oh, my apologies. So P3 is a modular pinball system. So what it is you have an LCD screen inside that plays and interacts with your targets and various things. The Weird Al one in particular, and I think all of them have this, have like these little raised areas that'll come up between the video part of the play field and the back end of the play field. And usually that's where like underpieces go, like for ball captures or different modes, right? But you can change out the parts on it and change the kit, the I guess it's like a board on it that you can change out. and have it be a different table. Huh. And these kits are, depending on like the base model itself is something like, I want to say $8,000. And then you can get different kits for anywhere, I think, between like 3 to 7. And then we're getting the deluxe Weird Al machine. So we also are getting an animatronic, but buying the machine, buying the kit, even with it installed in the animatronic edition, is about $12,000 for us. So we've sold tables to acquire it. Yeah. It's very novel. I mean, when we first saw it, we were sort of skeptical about it. Oh, this won't really go anywhere. They had another one that I didn't play called Valhalla. And a lot of people spoke very highly of that. I didn't play it because, honestly, I was like, I'm going to play Weird Al. I'll play a lot of Weird Al. But there's like, there's Lexi Lightspeed, there's Valhalla, there's Weird Al, there's another one that I can never think of. I think it's like a Western themed one. And I always want to say that Total Heist is the other one. And thank you, Bobby. And I always used to want to think that Total Nuclear Annihilation was one of them, but that's a completely different table that it was mean to me, and I don't want to play it again. But the Weird Al table is amazing. It even has Harvey the Wonder Hamster running in his little wheel, and has the UHF cameras and everything, and TV, and all of just the little neat bits and pieces. And so many call outs. Like, you just hear Al talking the whole time. And I didn't even hear everything he had to say. And like when you hit a drop target or something, it makes like a boing, or, you know, little comedic, cartoony crashing noises and things like that. It's very well thought out. I would say it's probably as well, if not better, thought out than many dedicated cabinets. So very well done. I put some stuff up on TikTok, I think, of me videoing, ginging other people playing it, and also me complaining about the guy that wouldn't shut up about playfield repair while I was doing multi-ball on Black Knight, sort of rage. Do not talk to me while I'm playing pinball. End of story.
SSJ100 Matt in chat says, I was super jealous of Jamie's pinball picks when she was posting. Looked like a lot of fun. Yeah, it looks like a fun event. I really should have gone. I didn't even know it was this weekend until I saw your retweets of your TikTok. And I was like, oh, no, it was the picture of a friend of mine from way back that you saw.
Oh, Amanda.
And then I was like, where did they run into each other? Did she go to the Bay Area this weekend? And then I saw Amanda's Facebook that she was volunteering at the pinball thing. And I was like, oh, of course. That's where
and
she
Dan
would
said
run into
that
Jamie, of
course. Beelined for him to find me, and I was coming in later in the day. I actually ended up there a little bit later than I wanted to.
Oh man, but I really should have gone if she was there.
Yeah, it was really good catching up with Amanda. I mean, it's been, gosh, I think like not long after her wedding.
That was a while
that I last saw her.
A while ago.
I mean, I think I saw her at a couple of other things, but it's been a while. But I'm checking out my pictures real quick just so I can remember everything that I played.
I took another guy to their wedding because I was dating him at the time. And Alan and I have been together for like 12 years. So.
Yeah. But I played Bride of Pinbot 2.0. Nice. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love the music in it and how they updated, you know, with the color DMD and everything. It's very worthwhile.
I love the updated machine with the color dot matrix displays. It's a DMD.
I didn't play their Twilight Zone because I own one, but someone had a modded back glass that was semi-holographic or lenticular with glowing LEDs behind it. I played Rush. I played a decent amount of Rush. I actually played the auctioned version because the room was much quieter. That was the room that had like the 60s and 70s pinball, including a Fritz the Cat one. I didn't know that they did one.
Oh, wow.
But It was fun to play that one because I couldn't hear the other ones. I played Avengers. That one was pretty fun, but again, I couldn't hear it. That's my weird TikTok video. I played Alien Star, which is a probably early 80s, late 70s. It was when they started doing the digital counters. I played Alice Cooper's Nightmare Castle, and that was fucking fun. That was great. I loved it. I wanted the Rob Zombie one was right next to it, and it looked great, had a deep play field, and everyone was just on top of it. I played Gladiator, which is a Gottlieb table. I played the Pabst Can Crusher.
The hell is that?
Like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea that was a thing.
I also got a good picture of the rig they had set up for the tournament for like streaming pinball. Oh, that's a picture of my key breaking off in the lock. That also happened. I also played Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It had lots of neat, you know, mods on it. You know, just like different figures and custom items. It was inside an inflatable tent. Like it looked almost like a bounce house from the outside. Apparently this guy's son made this thing.
Huh.
And then it was nice and cool inside to play turtles. It was awesome. I'll put pictures up of that. I played Space Invaders pinball. I played Star Trek. I played Pac-Man. I played this really weird game called Future Spa. It is definitely 60s, early 70s-ish, like, aesthetic.
Was it all pinball there, or was it, because like if you go
oh
to the,
yeah it was all pinball.
Okay, because like if you go to the Pinball Hall of Fame in Vegas, they still have like a good collection of like 80s and 90s arcade machines too, like one row is all that. So okay, but it was just like purely pinball, this thing,
pure pinball.
Gotcha.
Yeah, this year it was all pinball. I played the Incredible Hulk from the 70s. I played, like I said, I played Bride of Pinball. I played Transformers, the newer one. I bought a beer stein.
And these are all private collectors that bring these in, basically, right? Did you and Dan take any of yours?
And Stern. No, we didn't bring any of ours.
Okay. I was curious.
Stern brought in a bunch of demos. Like, they brought in Godzilla.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I didn't play. They brought in Avengers. They brought in Rush. They brought in... There wasn't actually a big Jersey Jack showing, which actually surprised me a little bit. I was hoping that Jersey Jack would have brought in some stuff. I think the only of theirs I saw was a Dialed In.
Hmm.
And there might have been a Lord of the Rings. I might have missed it. But these are all the pictures of my food. I was trying to see what else I played. So many pictures of Weird Al. Like, I was on that table like you would not believe.
And you get
so yeah,
machine,
Avengers,
like,
Infinity Quest.
Early next year, right?
I think mid next year, actually.
Oh, wow.
I also know that I played we were hoping that there would be a Stranger Things.
Oh.
And there wasn't.
Huh.
But I did also play a machine that, you know, I used to own. Well, I used to own Pinbot, Bride of Pinbot, and Jackbot, but we don't have those anymore. So I spent a little bit of time with Jackbot, you know, refamiliarizing myself. And I played Munsters, the black and white Munsters Deluxe that has like the mini, it's basically Grandpa's Lab. And it's a mini play field, with a tiny bit of pinball. And you play it, and it's pretty fun. I mean, if there's a version to have, there's that one. But for other tables that they had there, I mean, they had a lot of old, oh, yeah, I played, like, the old Pac-Man one from the early 80s, which is not very good. No baby Pac-Man. I looked.
Aww.
I looked.
That one's a weird one, though, because, you know, it's half video game, right? So it lives in a weird place.
I played Sword of Fury, which honestly has amazing music.
That's cool.
It's around the same era as Black Knight 2000, which there's also several Black Knights, Black Knight 2000, and a Black Knight Sword of Rage, which is the one I got irritated playing. For the tournaments, though, they had a World Cup soccer, which actually belongs to a friend and coworker. We didn't bring ours. There were no other World Cups out on the field, and that was actually the one they did the final round, the finals for today's tournament. And I felt bad because, like, the ball kept sticking in this one place. Apparently, like, a wire or a rubber on it broke or something. But they also had, like, an Iron Maiden for that. They had AC/DC. Godzilla was another one of the tournament tables. I'd have to go back and think about it, but they had a really diverse showing for the tournament tables.
Let me ask you this, because I know we want to get into the gaming news here, but I'm curious, like, how, you know, because it's been a couple years, because obviously COVID kind of shut down things for a while. How well attended did it seem to you? Did it seem like
it was pretty well attended?
People were ready for this to be back? Yeah.
Yeah. The thing, though, that I liked, and it was actually by necessity, is that the floor outlets in, because basically the convention center has like a huge gymnasium area, mm-hmm. and then another convention room, and then a smaller convention room where the tourney was. Mm-hmm. But the big gym area and the other room, the medium sized room, the floor outlets couldn't handle four tables. So they actually put the tables around the outside walls and then a couple of lines of them. And for me, well, and for the ones they could get on those multi outlets, they had them spread out in such a way that I think that it was honestly about as safe as it could get. And there were people masked. There were people not masked. You know, kind of a mix. There were more unmasked than masked. And of course, when I got, actually this morning, I took a test and it came back negative. So, but It was pretty well attended. It, maybe not as much as I've seen there for the past shows, but people were ready for it. And they didn't have like a big vending presence. I mean, Marco Pinballs was there, and a few people doing like pinball parts, and I think the pinball room was there. And then Stern has the Stern Insider thing now, where you have a barcode. And anyone can sign up for it, but they have a barcode scanner on, not a barcode, but a QR code scanner on the table. Mm-hmm. And if the owner of that table has registered it, then you scan the QR code from your phone and it tracks your scores on the leaderboard.
That's cool.
So that is really, that was a
smart
way to
incorporate
it.
See that modern stuff that pinball's doing to really stay, you know, because I know it's video games here at OLR, but pinball is super adjacent to that. And I think a lot of people are, you know, have that cross interest and so forth. And I think it's neat to see because, you know, whereas we've seen arcades, I think, really regress for many of us because we all joke that arcades are nothing but ticket spitting machines teaching kids how to gamble these days. You know, it's the arcades, from what we remember and what we miss, you know, they're pretty garbage. But pinball, like, feels like it's still a thing. It's still there. It's still in bars and, you know, a lot of coin-op arcades, you know, throughout the country and so forth. And it's still able to kind of progress in these different ways, which is pretty cool. And then obviously, you know, people have a lot of love for shows like this.
I bought you a mug.
Oh, what about, I can't wait to see it. What about like California Extreme? Speaking of upcoming shows, is that still a thing? Is that coming back?
The organizer of California Extreme was there.
Oh, nice.
And I also met a lady who was staffing here who also staffs for California Extreme. And it's definitely happening. Dan and I were...
With my luck, I'll be hosting a show that weekend. Oh, July 30th and 31st is when it
yeah.
is. Oh, tentative date. That's interesting. They still don't have that locked down. Interesting.
Well, I think that, honestly, I think it is locked from what I understand. But
maybe with COVID cases going up in the Bay, they're still a little skittish. Yeah.
I think that's it. But
anyway, before we get to kickoff news, any like other quick wrap up thoughts on the pinball thing?
We had there were people actually from all over that were there. One of the tournament players drove down from Boise.
Hmm.
We had one of our Reno buddies win the novice tournament, We had players from San Francisco. We had players. We had people come from all over to come to this convention. And
to beautiful Lodi.
Well, Lodi is kind of picturesque in that we're a small town.
It's also it's still considered just part of Sacramento, I think. You know, it's well, okay. Well, here's the thing. So one of the most famous people from Sacramento, they just named a park after him. They gave him a star, LeVar Burton. Like, right? One of the most famous people from Sacramento, an actual living legend, amazing actor, right? He's really from Galt. But it's,
yeah.
They just say Sacramento. He's really from Galt, but they just say Sacramento.
That's where Galt is. Like, you sneeze Galt's, driving to Lodi and Galt's missing.
Yeah, Galt's between Lodi and Sac. But anyway, I'm not going to bore our international audience with local geography.
And where I live, it really was like a 20 to 30 minute drive, depending on the traffic.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad at all. And, you know, it was really good just reconnecting with people that I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
And Dan said people were surprised to see me. I mean, I know I'm pretty much the recluse when it comes, you know, I don't go to the pinball tournaments because I was either working or streaming or to league nights. And honestly, that's a lot of people in small places, especially when it's at my house. But, you know, I'm also not competitive that way, so I don't really care about being in a competitive environment. But I genuinely like most of the people. And also, Dan's a co-host for the Spinner is Lit podcast, which is the podcast that he's on. Spencer, he and his wife, Rusty, moved out of state, but they came back for this. So we got to see Spencer and Rusty and got to see all kinds of just, you know, it was the reconnection. The pinball community in and of itself, it's just really a, I don't know, it's very different than, I guess, your standard arcade communities in that it's somewhat competitive feeling, but also when you're done, there's not really hard feelings. And then if there are hard feelings, they fade pretty quickly. I mean, there is drama in our local community, but most of the time people are just like, just hanging and chill.
It reminds me of what this show was founded on, the DDR community. Like, a lot of what you just said could be said about the DDR community. That, you know, at tournaments and stuff, people are cool. Like, you know, it's like, okay, a different person won, it's whatever. But then there were certain individuals within it that were very dramatic and, you know, all about the drama llamas, you know, and all that. But for the most part, like, you know, well, obviously this show exists because of that community. And even though we've all moved on from it, well, because the community died, you know, now to be fair, before somebody, you know, reacts to what I just said, I realized that newer Konami efforts in the arcade has kind of brought the Bomani and music game scene back. But I think people need to understand that since we started the show in 2002, there was that real gap between the time Extreme came out and Supernova came out that, you know, Konami killed Bomani for a lot of people, you know, in that kind of drought time. So it took a long time for it to come back, I think. So, you know, I'm just saying, the DDR community,
the community died for us.
It was reborn.
As we were.
It's reborn. It's different now because of the pandemic, because Discord brings people together instead of DDR Freak. It's just different, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Honestly, for me, Twitch is like my old AOL chat. I mean, seriously, that's how I met Dan. So actually, it's how I met a number of my Bimani friends before. I was playing BM98 on a Windows 3.1 machine.
Are you saying if I had been on AOL instead of Prodigy, are you saying if I've been on AOL that no matter what chat room I decided to go to, you would be in there already chatting? Because that's what happens on Twitch. No matter what
the
Twitch
thing is,
stream, that
you would probably have ended up in the same circles. Because that's
probably
just where all of the video game anime nerds,
I don't know,
went to.
A lot of my gay friends say that AOL for them was very different. And I never experienced any of that because I was, yeah, you know, I didn't figure things out until a little later in life. And we had moved on to the internet was out, gay.com. Anyway, let's move on quickly. Let's get into another. Thank you for the wrap up of the gaming expo, the pinball expo. Makes me jealous, and I think I want to go to California Extreme because July 30th. I was just looking at that for an Ingress event, but the Ingress event is in Germany, and a plane ticket to Germany.
You're not
going
to drive
now?
To Germany?
Yeah, I'm going to drive to Germany, Logie. A plane ticket to Germany right now. I was like, oh, maybe they're it's like $1,600. I was like, never mind. I'll just not do that event. And I will, you know, just do something else. So anyway, we'll do California Extreme maybe. All right. But let's get into some news. It's interesting. I just brought up DDR and the good old days and Konami. Because there's a lot of great Konami stuff from the good old days. Lots of franchises. And honestly, I don't think any of them are ever going to come back as good as they were. I don't know. A lot of people speak fondly of Bomberman, but and people speak fondly of the Castlevania collections, which are fine, but they're
nobody speaks fondly about the Metal Gears.
They're literally just ports of good games. You know, they're just ports of good games. I have concerns about where this next one is going. Loki, would you like to talk about the latest the rumor that won't die, but somebody put gasoline on the fire this week?
Yeah, so there is a well-known leaker by the name of Dusk Golem had shared some images of what's supposed to be a Silent Hill game. It looks like concept art. And then, of course, you know, normally we would just say, oh, yeah, of course, yeah, sure, Silent Hill. But then Konami ceased and desisted it and took it off the internet. So, of course, you know,
still all over the internet.
Yes.
Basically confirming it to the entire internet. This little thing we call the Streisand effect, right? We all know the Streisand effect. For those that have not heard the term before, you might think, why did they name something after Barbara Streisand? Because she had pictures of her house taken, like from an airplane or something like that. Like, I don't know. Paparazzi flew over her house, took pictures. She sued the website or whatever it was, the magazine or whatever, trying to get the pictures taken down. And the pictures were removed, but not before they were spread and published everywhere on the internet. Because you know how it goes. Tiger Claw just said it in chat. Once it's on the internet, it stays on the internet. And absolutely true for the Silent Hill League. But you see, Konami isn't run by incompetent people anymore. That is a fact. Like, I'm sorry, that is a fact. Konami is not run by competent people anymore. And before you start to go, but the arcade scene, okay, the arcade division is different from this rotting husk zombie of what used to be K-Set and the home entertainment division, okay? That is a fucking disaster. And I'm sorry, that is fact, because I'm just going to point at this eFootball. I'm just going to point at eFootball. Fact. I'm going to point at that hard Contra, or whatever that game was called. Contra Hardcore, whatever it was called. Fact. Bomberman, okay, maybe less of a fact, but how many years ago was that at this point? Like, we're getting more recent, like, examples that, like, Konami making games for the whole is like, this is not good news that Konami is making a new Silent Hill, unless, and this is the only way I'm going to get excited about it, they've roped somebody else, they gave the intellectual property to somebody else. But Konami's still the one that shut it down, so I'm a little worried about that.
That's outsourcing it to Kojima?
I doubt that. They already think they know who's doing it. But I'll let Loki finish. Sorry.
Yeah, so I don't think Kojima would be behind, you know, doing that kind of stuff. I don't know if we know who's actually working on this. But it looks interesting. It doesn't look like a Silent Hill game. I mean, like anything I've seen for a Silent Hill game right now.
So I believe the studio is Blooper or something like that. What's the no, it's not Blooper. Somebody in chat save me here. That there's they think they know what studio is working on it. It's been talked about before. Blooper. I was close.
Blooper.
Yeah, Blooper is the team that's rumored to be working on it. And I'm trying to see what else it is they did. I think they were the ones that did the Blair Witch reboot. Yeah, they did Blair Witch. They did the Medium. Observer, Layers of Fear. So they've done
The Medium certainly looks like, you know,
they've done other okay scary games.
Well, The Medium, I mean, that was the one that everyone was convinced was a Silent Hill game originally. So, I mean, they can certainly nail the style.
True. And what was interesting, too, about the leak is that a lot of folks noticed that it was a lot of British terms that were on, like, the little post-it notes. And people are thinking that if it's a reboot, it's potentially, like, a Europe Silent Hill. Whereas most of in fact, I think all of the Silent Hill that we've seen to date is, you know, America-based. It was all, the whole thing was based off a coal town in Virginia, something like that, yeah. That, you know, still smolders after all these years. So it'd be interesting if they move it to a British kind of location, but it's an interesting way to reboot it. So I feel nothing about that. Okay. It's, you know, show me the game. But what's interesting about it is that it seems like there's like a bullying theme to it, because like the little pieces of paper that are ripped away in her face, like one of them says, "I hate myself." And then you see in all the post-it notes that are decorated in the hallway, it says something like bully thing, like you're fat, you know, things that like bully terms that they'd say. And so people think it like could involve like a bullying thing. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see when we see, whenever they decide they actually want to reveal this, but them taking down these images just confirmed it. So a new Silent Hill game is or was, and that's important too, is or was being worked on. There's no guarantee it'll see the light of day. Hello, PT. But it seems,
if it's even actually Silent Hill.
Yeah, or if it even actually turns into an actual Silent Hill game. Very true. Loud Mountain. Who knows? No, I don't know. So
Loud Mountain.
It'd be Loud Valley if you're going for opposites.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Loud Valley.
Loud Valley.
So yeah, we'll see. I don't know, but it seems like it's happening, and it's just gonna now, you know, if it ends up being a Sony exclusive or whatever, it just really amps up the pressure on Sony. I don't know. I say that, but it's like Sony can do whatever they want when it comes to announcements. Like if they announce it, great. If they don't, whatever. I don't, because I think a lot of us are just like sick of talking about Silent Hill. Like it's been literally how many years since the PT demo? Like the PT demo is just about eligible to be a classic game of the week, I believe. It's been a long time. So I think people are just kind of like sick of speculating a Silent Hill game. And it's like, just come out already. I think the last Silent Hill games were 10 years ago. I think Downpour was 2012 and the HD collection. So, which, speaking of a disaster. Anyway. All right. Other comments from chat. Dr. Tsuya says, that's where I'm at. If they outsourced it to someone competent, it could be good. Yeah, I mean, when the talk was Hideo Kojima was somehow back and involved, that was very exciting. But now that we're talking,
it was never going to be their team putting it together because they don't have a competent team at that company.
No, that's very true. Tiger Claw says it's unfortunate. Konami is sitting on a bunch of IPs and doing nothing with them. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, re-releasing the hits. That's what they're doing right now. They're re-releasing the hits. Because when it comes to the Castlevania collection, the arcade collection, now we have the Ninja Turtles collection that's coming. That is pretty much a Konami thing, right? It's pretty much all their games that came out. They're just rehashing the hits. They're repackaging the oldies.
Repackaging the hits, yeah.
Exactly. So, I don't know what it'll do, what they can do to do something new. But anyway, we'll see where this leads. Let's move on to our gaming weeks and the types of games that we have been playing this week, whether it was the hits or something new. Darksoccer, I know you pretty much already talked about the Pinball Fest, but I'm sure there were some other video games in there you played too, right? How was your gaming week?
I started Terranigma.
Oh, yeah.
It's so slow to start.
It is.
It was so slow. I got so bored, but I made it past the towers. And so I think it's going to be a lot more interesting now. Of course, I did forego my stream last night for more Terranigma and Friday for, you know, where I was going to play more Dead by Daylight. Thursday, I did play Dead by Daylight. Make sure if you are playing the game that you log in every day to get your 66,666 blood points for the upcoming anniversary. Did you see the leaks?
I did see the leaks about Locker Guy and the new survivor with none of them.
The Dredge.
None of them have good perks.
Hattie.
Patty. That was
but it. The thing about her that makes me interested is she appeared in lore for years.
Mm.
She was in she and the guy Jordan that you could see on the written paper. Both of them were referenced in four different tomes, going back, I think, to tome 3.
Well, and the Dredge is in the Doctor's stuff, right?
The Dredge's backstory is that he was actually formed by the negativity from a particular village or something. There was a personification of
the negativity of the internet, because you could make a lot of killers out of that. Yikes.
Mm. It's basically all the salty survivors, you know, complaining about no Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bring Noed. I don't know. Why do you bring Deadheart, bitch? Anyway. By the way, I don't know if anyone in the DVD fandom follows Samination. Does these animated Dead by Daylight parodies. The last one is on point. On point. About annoying survivors. I'll leave it there. Also, they had the British lady who does the nurse and calls everyone a twat. I love her. All right, back to my gaming week. I've done Wordscapes and a shitload of pinball, and yeah, that's it.
All right, good enough. Loki, how about you? How was your gaming week?
Oh, Minecraft again.
Woo-hoo.
Sorry.
No, you're working on new videos, right?
Yeah, new videos. So I put out a video yesterday. Yeah, so I put out a video yesterday, and then just working on more stuff for that. Probably just gonna build more farms and stuff to take a break from building buildings. But yeah, it's been going well.
All right, good. My gaming week. I've also been playing a lot of the same stuff. I did a couple nights streaming Final Fantasy 14 on my personal stream. Shane joined me for a lot of random adventures. He was trying to teach me some of the new raids, so we did a few of the new 8-man fights. We were gonna finish up, but he has family in town this week, so we'll probably have to finish those other two fights later in the week or something. We'll see. And then I've also been playing. I played Dead by Daylight. I've been on a little bit of a break. I haven't played a lot lately, so I think that was good to kind of take a little break. And I was logging in to get my 66,000 blood points. I was like, I'll fire up a match or two. And I was actually having a good time. I've been playing more Killer again, which is interesting because I was doing a lot of Survivor for a bit, but I was like, Killer's fun. I still really love to play the Onryo or the girl Sadako from The Ring, but I'm not. Like I can feel that I'm not as good with her as I am with like probably Wraith. I actually don't really care for Wraith as a killer, but like he's really like a good basic killer, basically. You know, the cloaking mechanic is his whole thing is turning invisible and, you know, hiding from survivors and stuff. So I've been playing that.
Ding ding.
Yep. Oh, no, I always use that add-on where the ding ding, you hear it across the whole map. Like, it doesn't matter where you are. You hear the dings everywhere, so you never know if he's next to you or not.
Some people actually take the thing from the Samination of their Wraith going, ding, ding, bitches. I'll have to show you that, but yeah.
And then I'm going to be honest. Something I haven't played around with in a long time is emulators. I'm going to be just completely transparent. I fell down this rabbit hole of, I've never really explored RetroArch as an emulator before, but I just had this bug where I was like, I want to see if I can like get Dance Dance Revolution 3rd Mix from PlayStation 1. I'm like, my computer ought to emulate PlayStation 1 games. Alan's computer does it. I don't know. I've never done it. So I fell down this rabbit hole of getting RetroArch installed, getting the core installed, and playing Dance Dance Revolution 3rd Mix. And I even got the, I even figured out how to do the disc swap to like second club append and all that stuff, which was fun. And yeah, just a lot of stuff that I missed. So I was playing some DDR stuff. Yeah, Dark Tetsuya says, I know DDR PlayStation is tough to emulate because of the timing. Yeah, I noticed one core would get the timing way off compared to another one. So yeah, there's that. Bobby says RetroArch is great, but the people who develop RetroArch aren't the best. Oh no. Don't ruin it for me. Oh, there's drama. Well, I thought it was open source though, because I felt like there's all these cores, and like I recognize the Atari 2600 one was Stella, and that emulator's been around forever. So I figured a lot of it was open source or whatever. So interesting. That's where I started. I'm not saying that's the end all be all to emulators, but I was just having a good time finding old rhythm games and playing in an emulator since, you know, I can't play them any other, like, and I think I need to be open and talking about this as much as, you know, I don't agree with piracy and so forth. The answer
I could lend you a PlayStation.
Well, how else am I supposed to play? Well, okay, so fine. I could get an old PlayStation that still works. But the reality is, like, I can't play these on my PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5. You know, I can't even get them on the cloud because of all the music licensing and stuff. So it's like, I see it as game preservation and getting to revisit a period in my life that I really enjoyed. I would be happy to buy any new DDR game that they put out on PlayStation 4 or 5. I've bought them all. So, you know, anyway. Sacred Jade said no PS2 or PS3. No, I didn't get that far. I have a PS3.
I have a Japanese PS2 yeah. I could lend you.
Well, no, I actually still have a Japanese PS2. I don't know if it works or not. But
probably does.
My PS3 doesn't play PS2 games. I guess it would play PS1 games, though. But anyway. But it's, you know, I only have room to hook up so many systems on my TV, and I don't know if the PS2 works anymore, to be honest.
Well, and there, doesn't the PS3 also, like, adhere to the region locking?
Yeah, there's that, too. So that's an issue. So anyway,
like when we were doing endings, because our, like, for example, we were swapping out the endings to watch all the Tekken endings, and our Tekken 1 and Tekken 2 are American, but my Tekken 3 is Japanese. Mm. So just throwing that out there. We couldn't, once we switched to the Tekken 3 disc, we couldn't switch back.
Once I had the emulator up and running, then I was like, oh, I want to play some old Atari 2600 stuff because I have a bunch of, you know, dump 2600 games. I think we all do. They're so small. Like, you know, it's so easy to go back and visit them. There was a story going around. I don't think it's in tonight's show roll, so I'll just bring it up because Bobby had retweeted it and it caught my eye. And it was that they tracked down the programmer who made the first Atari 2600 game and first video game that had a woman as the lead character that you could play as. It was a game called Wabbit, W-A-B-B-I-T, and it was a woman who made it. And because of a misspelling, they lost track of her for years and years. But this website found her and did a whole little article on it and on that game called Wabbit. So I kind of had, you know, a bug to go play Wabbit because I thought the article was very well done. I thought she was a part of history, that gaming history, really, that hasn't been talked about a lot. Like, you know, we talk about, you know, Roberta Williams, you know, River Raid was made by what we, but this was one I honestly didn't know about. So I was kind of like, oh, I want to go play this Wabbit game. So I played a little bit of that. And then, that, of course, I fell down the Atari 2600 rabbit hole. Thank you. Tiger Claw found the article. Van Tran was the name of the, but they had misspelled it, like, they misspelled her first name, I think, or something. But anyway, very cool story that was going around. But then I fell down a rabbit hole. I played one of my favorites. H-E-R-O is one of my favorite 2600 games. I was playing Pitfall. So I was playing a bunch of random stuff. And then on NES, this is what I want to get to. I played a Zelda randomizer because that's another thing I've been wanting to get into, is I think the randomizers are fun. But then I realized I'm really disgustingly out of practice on Zelda. And so I need to just play Zelda 1, like, start to finish again before I think about doing a stupid randomizer, because it's hard if you're getting killed the basic stuff. So that's, I'm very out of practice. But I think the randomizer stuff is something I really want to get into because I think it's really fascinating. So, and I really love the randomizer that Zelda and Metroid mix together. I think that's cool.
Oh, yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, the Z1M1 or whatever it's called. I thought that was really cool, so I want to get into that. So thank you, emulators, for making that stuff possible. Because, I mean, Nintendo could do this themselves, but I'm sure, you know, based on all these interviews Reggie's been doing about his book, I'm sure the line would be, Nintendo doesn't see the value in doing it. Nintendo doesn't see the value in randomizers. Nintendo doesn't see the value in these classic IP. Nintendo doesn't see the value. Okay. Then fine. If you won't do it, then we will. All right, let's move on. We're going to get into some news and talk about other stuff that's been going on. By the way, I should bring this up. You know, usually we do a little bit of housekeeping after our gaming week and get into, like, what's in the news. I should bring this up at some point. We haven't done a lot of planning, but there's kind of a big show coming up for OLR, if you are not aware. June 26th, 2022, which happens to be my birthday. That's not the reason this is a big day, but it's a funny coincidence. It is the closest show to June 23rd, which is the actual 20th birthday of Orange Lounge Radio. So our 20th anniversary show will be June 26th, 2022. I have no idea what we're going to do to make it special. But that's it. I'm just putting it out there. We will be doing our 20th anniversary show on June the 26th. So we'll see. Bobby says he will miss it. You know what I kind of want to do? I haven't talked to my co-host about this. I don't know. But if Bobby's not here that night, that means we can do as long of a show as we want. So if we want to do an all-day show, we can. I kind of want to. But I don't know. Then again, I also
be
go,
me screaming while I play Dead by Daylight in the background.
I'm also in my 40s. And I'm like, I don't know if I could go all day anymore.
I've done 13 hours.
I don't know if I could. I don't know.
With the three of us, we could do a marathon. That would be easy.
Yeah, we probably could. It would be easy. We'll see. So more planning to come. We've got 6 weeks to figure it out. So in good OLR fashion, we'll figure it out in 5 weeks, the weekend before. All right, but I just wanted you to note, I wanted you to circle that on your calendar, just like Bobby Blackwolf neglected to do when he was like, oh, I'm going to go to Minneapolis instead. But since it's for a charity event that's actually kind of awesome, I guess I won't give him a lot of shit. But it does mean that, you know, since Bobby won't be here, technically we could take over the stream for the entire day. So there is a silver lining to this, and I'm willing to work on the silver lining. Other question here before we get into other news. Tiger Claw says, you played the new Evil Dead game? I haven't. I watched some streams of it because a lot of the Dead by Daylight streamers are pivoting because, you know, Evil Dead is another 4v1 game, but it looks very different. It doesn't really look...
Well, and VHS is still down.
Yeah, VHS is still down. The killer isn't like killers in Dead by Daylight. And the whole, like, crux of the game is different. And that's fine. Like, not everything should be compared to Dead by Daylight just because it's 4v1, or Evolve, if you will, but just because it's 4v1. It did look interesting. It looked like some of those, like, enemies in it are mean. Really, like, they rush at you and say, it looks kind of scary. I don't know. It might be a bit too intense for me. But I enjoyed watching the streams. So, we'll see. All right, let's get into gaming news. We'll start off with this story from Loki. Loki, please start us off.
Yes, so there is a lawsuit against Valve saying that Steam is giving Valve too much power. Apparently, it is moving forward in the U.S. District Court, and this is regarding, I guess, Wolfire Games. They had alleged that Valve is using its, I guess, dominance of the market to enforce control over developers and influencing how games, even non-Steam games, are sold and priced. I think one of their arguments is there is a rule that you cannot price your game lower, like, on another marketplace permanently than you can on Steam. Because if you think about it, like, if I put my game up on Steam, but then I'm making it available on my site and selling it, like, you know, much cheaper than it is on Steam, I'm kind of using Steam as, like, you know, trying to get exposure through Steam, but then I'm selling it directly on my site. So that,
well, people would manipulate Steam's cut that way. They would be, it's the whole Fortnite thing, which is a whole other Oprah. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into, but it's kind of that. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Also, you know, complaints about the percentage that they're taking, that's, you know, 30% is too much, even though I think a lot of the platforms out there right now take 30% as well.
Kind
so
of
it's
standard.
Kind of,
yeah,
it is kind of the standard. You know, according to Rosin, he said that, I believe that this makes developers afraid that if they don't sell on Steam, they will lose the majority of their revenue. To those developers, avoiding Steam would add unacceptable risk to the already high risk of game development in general. I believe that most developers have little or no choice to sell on Steam and do as they're told by Valve. Well, it's because they're the leading marketplace, and if you want your game, you know, a lot of people use that marketplace. I would be willing to bet Epic has probably similar rules when it comes to pricing your game. And you're not limited to just sell on Steam. You can sell in other places.
Amazon has that same pricing rule, by the way.
Yeah, they're just saying that, like, you have to price your games the same. I don't know.
It's very similar. This is a throwback, but it's very similar to Walmart and audio CD censorship. And how artists would get pissed off when their audio CDs would get censored, like a sticker would go over something on the cover, or there would be the clean lyrics version of the album, because otherwise Walmart wouldn't sell it. And to not be in Walmart would be to not have your CD sold in many parts of the country. Obviously, the internet has fixed all of this, because now you can, you know, download anywhere. But it reminds me of that, how things would be, literally art would be changed so it could be sold in a certain marketplace. And at least Steam isn't changing anything. Loki, can I ask this question? You're a game maker. Sure. You're a game developer. You're a published game developer.
Okay, yeah.
Did you sell more of your game on itch.io or Steam?
I think it's about the same.
Okay.
Honestly, like, and itch still takes a cut too. I don't remember what their cut is, but I think it's similar.
Yeah.
I don't know, honestly. The numbers are so small that I can't tell you where more of them came from. I think probably itch, maybe but it's almost even if anything.
Because I think you were telling people to get it on itch because you get a better cut. So
no, I wasn't saying it to do it that way necessarily. It's both. It's basically the same either way. You get it. It's just easier than saying, you know, download this game, then download the DLC for this game as well. Like, I think that confused people a little bit. So I was just saying go through it because it's easier. Or you can get it whatever platform you want, honestly.
Yeah.
So I don't know necessarily that. Like, the only pressure I think that I would feel, like, if I was publishing a game, let's say it wasn't a Nintendo game, like, the only pressure I'd feel of wanting to get my game on Steam is because that's where most of the eyeballs are, and Steam is a huge marketplace where, you know, you could sell games, and you can sell, people just buy games off their, like they're collecting stuff, like, a lot of the stuff you don't even play, but you can probably make a lot of sales, and they're like doing that with bundles and stuff like that. But it is a huge marketplace. Like, you could put your game on like the Epic Game Store or something like that, but that's not as big of a marketplace. Or Good Old Games is another option as well. But once again, those marketplaces aren't as large as Steam. Steam is just, you know, massive. There's lots of it. There's lots of other storefronts, and with being PC, I mean, it's super easy to just offer your game up through different storefronts. I don't know, but we'll see. Right now, the reason why the lawsuit's moving forward because the judge agrees that there is a sufficient to plausible alleged unlawful conduct, I guess. So it's just it's plausible that maybe they're doing something, but it's going to be a hard case to make, I think.
I think so too. I think because, you know, games can be sold in many other different marketplaces. I think it's going to be a tough case to prove, but we'll see. Because, you know, the justice branch of our government is all sorts of does all sorts of dumb things right now. So who knows what's going to happen? All right.
Yeah.
Moving on, let's talk about the Nintendo Indie World Showcase that happened this week. Yay! Indie World, so it's a bunch of announcements, of course, about the more indie games that are available on Nintendo Switch. They showed off 20 games. 4 games were available today. Some of the games that they showed off at the Indie World included Ooblets, Batora Lost Haven, which is a like action-y RPG type of game that's a little bit Diablo. Elekhead, kind of a puzzle game.
I saw that one.
Yeah. Soundfall, which just came out, and that game looked really cool because that was a music game dungeon crawler. Like, talk about a game that's up my alley. And it has over 140 songs in it. I believe there is a Steam version of this, ironically enough, that I think you can import your own music too, which obviously you wouldn't be able to do on Nintendo Switch, but it does have 140 songs in it. And that looked really cool. I want to check that game out. So Soundfall was probably the one that like had my like got most attention for me. Wild Frost, a roguelike deck builder. It's pretty cool. With like Norse mythology in it. Totally Accurate Battle Simulator. Gunbrella, which is a new game from Gato Roboto developers, Doinksoft. It's a noir punk Metroid kind of game. We Are OFK, which is a kind of like making the band kind of narrative adventure. And that is also just came out this week with the Indie World. Silt came out as well. Looks like kind of a scary game with fish, scary fish. Mini Motorways, Wayward Strand, Cult of the Lamb, which was a game that had been shown at PAX East, so a lot of folks had their hand on it anyway. Another Crab's Treasure, One-Shot World Machine Edition, Gibbon Beyond the Trees. Sorry, I'm running through this, but there's a lot of games. Idol Manager, Card Shark, which is an interesting kind of looking card game where you actually are cheating at cards. It's kind of cool. Cursed to Golf. That title alone is great. It's a golf roguelike game that was also at PAX East, so some people saw that already. A Guidebook of Babel and Opus Echo of Star Song, the Full Bloom Edition. So, I mean, I don't think there were any games in there that people, like huge indie games that people, but there was, you know, some PAX stuff and some things that, you know, reports of PC things that, you know, people were excited to see about. But this is definitely like the calm before, I would assume, the big June Nintendo Direct that will have what can we can expect for the rest of the year. So that would be pretty cool. So that was Indie World. Let's move on. Dark Sakura.
Finding my unmute button would be nice. Hello.
Hi.
So Twitter is doing video games, kind of, sort of. Basically, there is a little game that they put out called Twitter Data Dash, and it's a little side-scrolling platformer that basically tries to prepare one for how to combat disinformation on the internet. You play a little cute puppy. He's blue. His name is Data. And you have to find these bones that are hidden in this environment. Basically, after you complete the objective, the level ends, and then Twitter gives you like information, like a PSA announcement before you can go on. There was like the author here says that they gave instructions on how to filter DMs or how to turn off targeted ads, stuff like that. But then as you go through the game, though, you do have some sort of enemy. So like when you start the game, it gives you a warning of avoiding cat ads that are in the way. And you run into some cats who have their own little propaganda.
But I love
and you
cats.
Have to dodge them to not take damage.
But I want to hug the cats.
Me too.
It's
I want to hug
game.
Every cat. The thing is that, you know, it's been stated by other people that if Twitter wanted it to be accurate, you wouldn't be just running around freely. You wouldn't just be dodging, you know, bad guys and getting, you know, bones or whatever. The bad guys would be unavoidable. Mm. They would crush you. They would surround you. Mm. And they would even do it when you're not playing. Because that's how the internet mm-hmm. works. Mm-hmm. You know, if we were going to have a more accurate representation, we'd be playing fucking Twitter meets Elden Ring. You know? But I can see what is behind it. Just, I can see it being a conversation starter, something to get people thinking about it. And also, how can Musk not realize that there are fucking fake accounts on Twitter? I mean, seriously?
He's doing his research. He's checking 100 random accounts to make sure they're not bots.
He's going to find some roleplay accounts and be like, the fuck is this shit?
I hope he comes across everybody's alts.
I hope he finds one of my roleplay accounts that I don't touch anymore.
that sample size, 100 out of 3.5 million or something like that, or however many.
That's not even
apparently
scratching the surface.
He claims that's what Twitter does internally, but you know what? This story has nothing to do with him, and as far as I'm concerned, I would like Twitter to have nothing to do with him, and I'm hoping to hell that deal falls apart, because I've said this very openly on my Twitter. If he reverses that ban on the insurrectionist, I'm out. I'm not using Twitter anymore, period. I'm not going to, and you know, people are quick to say, oh, you're just being dramatic. You don't mean it. No, I fucking mean it. Like, spite is incredibly motivating. There is nothing forcing me to use Twitter. I like Twitter. I met a lot of awesome people on Twitter, but I'm not going to use it if he's back on it. Bye.
Lee, I still would rather Twitter than Facebook. Even with,
oh yeah, I
Facebook is even more harmful.
I don't know where I go if I no, I'm and I'm not just gonna say, oh, I'm
going
gonna do
back
Instagram
to LiveJournal, baby.
I'm honestly,
I've been
I
tempted
might.
Actually.
Actually, you know what I will say I like is Pillow Fort, because it's very similar to LiveJournal without, you know, basically being a Russian company at this point. Which, you know,
I still have my Lifetime account.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's true. I have mine too. So, but I like Pillow Fort's nice. But I think if Twitter does unban, you know who, I think there's going to be, and I know people are quick to point out he has said he's not coming back to Twitter. Number one, I don't trust a word out of that motherfucker's mouth. And I call him the same thing that Patti LuPone calls him, motherfucker. And number two,
except I don't think his mom would do it.
Number two, it's sometimes it's about the principle. Just it rolling out the red carpet, inviting the person back is bad enough for me that I'm willing to leave. So anyway, just putting that out there.
Well, but that still though doesn't really have.
Oh yeah, it has nothing to do with the
back
game.
Back to the game.
Yeah, sorry. So the game, obviously, this was something that was being worked on long
actually,
before any of that. Go ahead.
I had a little bit more about it.
Go for it.
The thing is that I think that the game itself, like I was saying, is a great idea. It's good to get it into the thoughts of people who would not normally think about this kind of thing. It actually probably even good for kids new to social media, you know, get them starting to be on the road to good habits. But as many have pointed out, it's not going to do enough. But if it can get the conversation started and get people thinking about what they read, then even if that thing returns, if it can at least get people starting to think objectively about anything anyone says on the internet, then I'm for it.
Yeah.
It's a little gesture. We know it's not the whole story. Who fucking cares? It's getting the conversation started.
I applaud the attempt to educate, and I think games go a long way in educating, and we don't often talk about that topic on this show, although we all reminisce about the Oregon Trail, Carmen Sandiego, Number Munchers, and all those edutainment games of the Reader Rabbit, whatever. Like, we all reminisce about the edutainment games of the past, but, you know, games are a very effective tool in being able to teach. I think as far as this one goes, the only kind of weird thing about it for me, I only heard about it through video game blogs and, you know, the types of sites. I didn't see anything about it on Twitter. And Twitter knows that I play video games because I get the recommended topics and all that. So Twitter knows I'm like a gamer. So it's weird to me that Twitter themselves hasn't tried to put this game in front of me. And I don't know if maybe it's just a slow burn. They're not ready to do that yet. They want to test it a little more and that sort of thing. But it's a little weird that I only found out about it because I follow gaming things. Or maybe that was the intent. I don't know. But I feel like this needs to get out in front of a lot of people. Not just...
I like the art style, though.
Yeah. There's a lot of good things about it. You know, and I applaud the fact that they're trying, despite the fact that, you know, we might be pointing out ways it could be better. But
how dare they demonize cats like that?
Yeah, that's the number one complaint I have. That's for sure. All right. Well, let's talk about something that a lot of people are bitching about. Like, not people I follow, but I'm seeing a lot of bitching elsewhere on Twitter about this one. Loki, please.
What? You know, we talked about last week how Square Enix made the brilliant you know, decision to sell off their assets because they're jumping headfirst into the NFT market. And just like, you know, the South Park meme, and it's gone. So the NFT market is basically down 92% from last September. So it's crashing hard. There's been the hashtag crypto crash going around. They said $200 billion has been recently wiped out of it. And even on top of that, you know, crypto currency is also down as a whole right now, and by a lot, I think. So it's, you know, not probably a good time to jump in the NFTs. Or maybe this is the dip that we all have to buy. That's probably what they're trying to convince us of.
That's what those Twitter accounts will be convincing you of right now, attempting to convince you of.
So there was another game company that had put out was Axie Infinity, which was a kind of a Pokemon type game, I guess, that you would breed monsters with potions, and you would use your cryptocurrency or earn cryptocurrency through that. But apparently, though, the Axie Infinity's SLP, or their Smooth Love Potions, which is, I guess, the currency that they had, went down to zero from, I'm not sure where it was originally at here. Let's see. A lot more than zero, I believe. But yeah, it's pretty much worthless now. So it's one of those play the earn games. So you can earn a bunch of worthless stuff. Like any other game that you would play.
There's a lot of video games that you earn worthless stuff, but, you know, basically people were lied to thinking it would actually have
value.
Yeah,
it wasn't worth a ton. I mean, this is kind of like Dogecoin a little bit, where like SLP was basically at 35 cents each, but now it's, you know, a lot less than that. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a drop, but, you know, not great.
I already ranted about this plenty last week, so I'm not going to repeat myself, but I'm just going to stress, you know, again, and I think, you know, if you listen carefully to what the three of us were talking about last week in that discussion on NFT, we said in there is potential. There is potential with this, with the right implementation of it. The problem is the face of NFT right now is crime, get rich quick schemes, hacks, Twitter MLMs, basically Reddit posts, like the face of and those hideous fucking monkeys. The face of NFT right now is so broken, like no fucking shit, it crashed. And if this technology is ever to be rescued and implemented for something good, it needs a better face. It needs something better behind it. It doesn't need a Pokemon knockoff. It needs Pokemon. It doesn't need a knockoff of a good racing game. It needs a good racing game with a good reason and something that doesn't fucking read as transparent, because the gaming community will be up your ass if you implement something that's half-assed. Again, I'm going to point to the Diablo 3 Real Money Auction House, which, as far as I'm concerned, was this many years ago and has already failed. So if this is ever to be successful, and again, I'm not going to repeat myself a lot from last week, but it just needs to have a better mascot than what it has right now. And it needs to stop feeling like a giant fucking pyramid scheme, because that's what it feels like. And I'm sure there's lots of crypto bros that want to take issue with what I said. Tough shit. I'm just saying what everyone is thinking. I just told you what the problem is. Maybe you should, instead of trying to bully people into your opinion and how we're all wrong about NFTs, maybe you should work on fixing the actual problem. Done. Would anyone else like to add anything? All right.
No, I think that pretty much sums it up.
I think I try my best. All right. Then let's
move. Well done.
Yes, Dark Sakura?
I said, well done, Rob.
Oh, well done. Oh, okay. I thought you said, hold on. And I was like, oh, yes, yes, please.
No.
All right. All right. Let's move on and talk about Final Fantasy XIV. This controversy seems so like lighthearted compared to the last one. But anyway, Final Fantasy XIV is having some issues with mods, because mods really aren't allowed for Final Fantasy XIV. You are not supposed to be using third-party modifications that will change your HUD so that you can do things that aren't normally in the game. Very controversial with things like DPS meters. Also, like these add-ons and HUD upgrades, they're all over WoW, World of Warcraft, and have generally been accepted as a part of WoW for a long time. They're not in Final Fantasy, or they're not really endorsed by Final Fantasy 14, and in fact, they're actually against the terms of service. It's interesting, though, because there was one point when Final Fantasy 14 was supposed to be embracing these. They said they were going to kind of support mods and allow it, but then I think they had a change of heart when they saw how people tend to treat DPS meters, and that people would just be shits to people over their DPS if they weren't, you know, the best of the best. And some of the toxic stuff you see in WoW, which is interesting that WoW is now implementing a social contract, but I digress a little bit. Anyway, what's going on and why is this issue coming up now? Because there's a world first race going on right now. And there's a new raid that was in the game, Dragon Song's Reprise. It is very hard. It is considered an ultimate raid. Final Fantasy XIV does not do test servers. People were not able to explore this fight before the fact, like happens a lot in WoW. When this went live, this was people's first time kind of getting to see all this. So, so this was the first time that this was out, and, there's a big world first race amongst all these different, you know, raiding groups that try to put this together. And there was a stream of the game. A Final Fantasy 14 player, Hiroro, was playing the game, and he had mods visible on his stream as was racing for world first. He got automatically teleported to the Mordian Jail. It is a room. And by the way, if you listen to other podcasts, call this Gaol. It's just jail. It's an old English way of saying jail, and they use this a lot in Final Fantasy 14. So the player went to the Mordian Jail, and that was all happening live on stream. And the GM basically said, you have to change it, or you're going to get a suspension. The footage has since been erased from Twitch, but you know how it goes. There's screenshots of the stream. There's something on YouTube going on. Bagel Goose. It happened to them, too. They also got transported to the jail. And that is all on YouTube to see. So, yeah. It actually cultivated with Yoshi P writing a whole letter basically saying, stop using these add-ons. You're not supposed to be using them. But maybe a sort of like a peace offering or something like that. They're looking at possibly upping the HUD elements that are in the game right now. In the statement, Yoshida said, it goes without saying that we're aware of world races for high-end duties. As the developers, we're proud to have grown into one of the few games where they're held, and it delights us to see so many players participate as well as spectate with great interest. But a race should be fair, and it's our earnest wish that participants don't use third-party tools. Indeed, we've only released duties that we've proven can be beaten with the game standards features, meaning they've beaten it in-house. Square Enix may stop congratulating race-winning teams if this public recognition encourages excessive competition and controversy so that third-party tools are used. And that's very interesting, I think. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, they kind of go on to say maybe they need to make some improvements to the HUD and work on that. So the team is kind of looking at this going, all right, what can we do to make this better rather than just, you know, yell at everybody for breaking the rule. So I think that's kind of interesting. We intend to review the most prominent tools and in order to discourage their use, endeavor to enhance the functionality of the HUD. Though it will take some time, we're determined to make it happen, not least for the benefit of those who play on consoles. And that's an important point too. It is much, much harder to mod a PlayStation 4 or 5 to play this game. I'm not going to say impossible, but it's much harder to put those mods into this game than it is on PC. So by default, everybody's pretty much playing on PC. But Final Fantasy 14, I think, really embraces its nature of being playable both on PC and PlayStation. So, yeah. All right. Anyhow, we're going to move on to our next story. So, Dark Sakura, why don't you take up our next story?
All right. So, when we had the Black Lives Matter protests, the video game companies were pretty loud and vocal in support of it, remember?
Yes, all the white text on black backgrounds. Yes, I do remember that.
Yep. For the record, this is important. At any rate, when there was that leaked draft of that disgusting opinion by Justice Alito, our video game companies have actually been pretty silent about it. I mean, then again, how many of them are mostly white dudes, cis dudes, who wouldn't know anything about a woman's body except insert tab A into slot B, repeat as necessary? But anyway, we did get some support. And actually, don't just get me started on that one, because that man has zero concept of who he's referencing in history. The people that he's referencing are back from the 1800s, the 1700s, and back in those days, guys had no involvement other than getting their wives pregnant, and they were slave owners. All right, I'm going to take a step back, because I could go off on this as someone who knows history. That man needs to get his Catholic ass back in school with a real history teacher. Anyway, so after the draft was leaked on May 2nd, Bungie published a statement in regards to reproductive rights, saying that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it is, quote, a blow to freedom in America and a direct attack on human rights. And had asked fans to donate to reproductive rights organizations. A few other indie developers, like Double Fine, ArenaNet, that does Guild Wars, did their own statements. And then there's some workers who said that they would participate in the week-long Mother's Day strike by stopping work for their companies for that week. But the biggest names haven't said anything. I mean, we had almost universal support for Black Lives Matter. But I mean, and also for the anti-Asian hate crimes that were happening right after COVID-19 was, you know, a new pandemic. And I'm going to go ahead and say what my source is on this. It's the Washington Post. And they reached out to 20 different video game companies. And only Microsoft and Activision replied. Hmm. Microsoft said, Microsoft will continue to do everything we can under the law to protect our employees' rights and support employees and their enrolled dependents in accessing critical health care, which already includes services like abortion and gender-affirming care, regardless of where they live across the U.S. The support is being extended to include travel expense assistance for these and other medical services where access to care is limited in availability in the employee's home geographic region. Amazon, Tesla, Lyft, Uber promised monetary aid and legal protection to their employees in states that have bans. But the thing is, there's all these other states that are already have legislation in the wings or have passed legislation that is now on a stay, that all of that is threatened to be overturned. And I think in Missouri, they said that if you leave the state to seek healthcare of that nature, and it is healthcare that they will prosecute. And now, the studio Certain Affinity, which worked on Halo Infinite, based in Texas, their CEO was saying that it took them by surprise. And he's quoted saying that we will absolutely take a strong stance on this. We will consider how to best support our staff who may be effective, but we haven't had a chance to get out in front of messaging or strategy yet. It caught us a bit off guard. We're still an independent company with limited resources. The thing is that this is absolutely an attack on women and uterus possessing people. It is an attack. Alito's document stated that by his weird convoluted logic that this is not a gender issue, that it is not discriminatory against women or those possessing a uterus. It absolutely is, because the only people that it affects are people who can be pregnant. And the theory is that with reversing this, that they're going to start pushing for more and more, like reversing access to contraception, to start reversing things like marriage equality.
Over my dead body.
Supporting our transgender people, the protections that they have. It's a major step in reverse. And the thing is that like when Bungie came out and they had a big statement about it, they got chastised for being, quote, too political. But the thing is, like, didn't Disney just get shat upon for not saying enough where they were? Mm-hmm. You know, everything is going to be a damned if you do, damned if you don't. Take your fucking stance.
Right.
And own it. And defend it. Mm-hmm. Because you know what talks, at least in the U.S.? Money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what one of the biggest industries in this country is right now? Gaming. Mm-hmm. Technology. You don't have support from those industries, you're going to get fucked. And on top of that, especially, like, I'm actually surprised that Activision Blizzard would make a comment against the overturning, given their history, but it's a wise move, even if it is purely for the optics.
Did you see the thing, though? And I don't mean to digress too much, but it's not on our show tonight, and I have to ask. Did you see the thing, though, that they published trying to get some weird internet points or something about the diversity math? Is what it basically boils down to. Their whole this is how we.
I didn't see that.
Oh, look up the tweets.
Oh wait, I have a statement
here.
Isn't
there
here,
like diversity algorithms?
Says we are committed to an inclusive environment that is supportive of all of our employees. This comes from Rich George, who's their spokesperson. As a company, providing fair and equitable health care is a top priority, and we will closely monitor developments in the coming weeks and months. And then Mike Ibarra. He said, I realize that we are late and I am sorry. It has been incredibly stressful for Blizzard and me personally as we read the news.
Yeah.
I realize this isn't very helpful, but I'm being honest where we are and what we are discussing across the company. And then they go into some of that about company, you know, about employees being distracted, scared for the future, about Kotick's, quote, commitment to improving the working conditions. And then I love this part of it. In fact, I'm actually going to read this verbatim. Mr. Kotick made a commitment to improve the working conditions of the many lives that work under him and make Activision the best company it can be. And I can say without hesitation that as of right now, he's failing all of us. Mm. Thank you. No, I didn't read that. Usually anytime I see something from Activision, it makes me want to vomit. So I'll go look for it.
It's pretty cringe. It's just one of those things where it's like, what did you hope you were going to get from talking about this? I don't know. It is weird. It's very weird. Go ahead.
One last quote on this one comes from Robert Anderberg, who's the CEO of Control Z. Says, our position on abortion rights in the U.S. is that we support a woman's right to choose to have an abortion for any reason. Says the company operates in 5 countries, including the U.S. However, of these countries, the U.S. is the only one where abortion is restricted and about to become more so. We are socially behind.
Mm-hmm.
We are way socially behind. Mm-hmm. And that's what you fucking get when you form a country based on religious escapism. Because I'm sorry.
Even though we're supposed to have separation of church and state in this country, but that's the amendment everyone's.
But the country, the first people fucking over here, apart from the people who were after money, were basically religious extremists. That's just how it goes. At any rate, the Mother's Day strike actually it ends today, being Sunday. But I still ask everybody out there that if you are a woman, if you know a woman or a uterus possessing individual who is capable of giving birth, think about how you are hurting them if you support the overturning. Think about the mental health of these people and ask yourself if, especially because I can tell you this way, the rich people of the world are always going to have access to contraception and abortive care. They're always going to have access. This affects the poor, the disenfranchised, many minorities in the country. And it's another way that they're trying to contain power amongst the wealthy. And instead, ask yourself this. If you support, if you want to ban abortion everywhere, then are you willing to convert our government to a socialist model that will then pay for all of these births that you're sponsoring, basically, with your words? Are you ready for us to be a socialist country? Because that's the only way that we're going to take care of all of these people, or else you're going to end up with a lot of dead children on your hands. And it's all your fault. Secondly, the heartbeat bill? There's no fucking science that there's a heartbeat that early. It's electric synapses. The heart has not fucking formed. Science, people. Read a fucking science book. Okay, I'm done.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I'm not going to talk over you when you're talking on this segment.
Part of that, and I'm going to be perfectly upfront with everybody, I had my tubes removed. And one person tried to talk me out of it, a medical professional, and women and uterus-possessing people younger than me who have gone in for sterilization have been rejected. And I will tell all of you this right now. If you are going to the doctor to be sterilized, no matter your age, if you are of an age of consent, if they do not do it, you ask them, I want it in writing that you are refusing to treat me. Okay.
No, you're fine. Let me get to some chat. You're getting a lot of snaps, go, exactly, preach it. You're getting a lot of that from chat. So, but I do want to read some of these other comments. Questbuster says, Bungie's Twitter also clapped back at responses telling them that they should only be a game company and keep politics out of it. Yeah, honestly, I thought that was pretty great too. I have a little bit of sympathy. I understand the companies that are like, we were caught off guard with this and we don't like have a statement yet. We were all caught off guard by this, but this should be a huge fucking wake up call. And I think it is for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people didn't want to admit, oh, when they stole those Supreme Court seats. And they stole those Supreme Court seats. Again, I know this isn't a political podcast, and you all probably don't want to hear it, but look.
Sorry, life is politics. Deal with it.
Exactly. Look at the impact it's having on games. Reality check. Look at the impact it's having on the game developers. Reality check. It is games, whether you want it to be or not. And those Supreme Court seats were stolen. Let's be completely honest. They were stolen for this purpose.
I have to take another semi-side step and address something that Pod Culture said about Christina having to fight to get her hysterectomy for endo.
Mm-hmm.
Endometriosis is actually underdiagnosed in uterus-possessing people. But women are often don't get... And I'm using women now in the I'm possessing a uterus thing, even though I know it's not entirely accurate. It's just easy to say. Endometriosis is a debilitating illness. It causes pain. It can lead to infertility, and it goes so underdiagnosed that by the time it can take anywhere between 5 to 10 years for a person to get a diagnosis of this. And people will go in like around 15, 16 with debilitating pain, not get any diagnosis until they're in their late 20s. And by then it's too late. People with coronary issues are often underdiagnosed because it doesn't present itself the same way it does in male bodies. Overall, there is such a poor understanding of the way that a feminine body works because all of the medical research has been done mostly on male bodies, because especially in Western culture, the female population has been seen with disdain, especially in the U.S. That's just always been how it is. When the, you know, Alito keeps going back to the Constitution, but the thing is that the Constitution was written by rich white men, slave owners. Women were not considered at all in the drafting of the Constitution. People of color were not appreciated at all in the drafting of the Constitution. It took amendments to have that consideration. So if you apply all of this historical context to what we are dealing with right now, it makes perfect sense. And it also makes sense that everything that they're trying to do is going to rewind us back as a society. This isn't just political. This has to do with physical health, mental health, quality of life. And it's absolutely disgusting. Mm-hmm. And the moment that you take a step back and you look at a uterus-possessing person as a fully realized human being who should have the same rights and control of their body as any penis-possessing person. And I said penis on the show, and I feel glad about it. Hey, I had to lighten things up a little
bit. I
want
to say it too, penis.
But okay, penis, fine. But anyway.
Loki, you want to join in?
Vagina, how about that? Okay. But the penile possessing are given more rights, especially if you are white and cisgender and have money and are Christian. If you hit all those little tick marks, you're at the top of the food chain. You have all the rights. No one can fuck with you, basically. But if you were anything less than that, you are other. If you were anything that is not, you know, business suited, you know, fine dining, white people, you are still considered. Even, I can tell you this right now, if you hit all of those tick marks, but you're black, you're already other. If you hit all of those tick marks, but you're a woman, you're already other. It's this disgusting double standard that's in this country. And then we have people who are really at the bottom of the food chain who just think automatically because they are white that they are exempt from all of this, that they don't care because it's not happening to them. Well, guess fucking what? It does happen to you. You are in that lower percentile and you are other to them. They don't give a shit. And if you want them to give a shit, you need to start thinking objectively. You need to start using logic. You need to take your emotions out of the picture and lay down the fact. Study your history. Look at the world around you. Look at other fucking countries. Our internet searches here are so America-based once they check your IP that it's hard to find actual news that is happening outside of this country. Like, I have to use a VPN if I actually want to go to the real BBC website, for example. And we need to stop looking at our little narrow box. We need to stop looking at the thing that's right in front of us and look at the big picture. It is not just you in this country. It is not just me in this country. And it's not just this country. We're a fucking world. What we do here affects so many other people on top of it. People look to America. I hate to say it because what the fuck are we doing right now? But people look to us. And the moment that we keep othering our own people is just going to widen those divisive lines. It's going to weaken us as a country. It's going to weaken our individual people, weakens our economies. And I know that I'm going way past the video game thing here right now, but
ain't no one going to stop you. Go off.
But all of this together, it's all intertwined. I mean, and then let's go back to that othering. Let's look in the video game industry for othering. How are women treated in multiplayer games once someone finds out that it's a woman? Even though we now make up the majority of gamers online. We are the majority now. And I'll go with SSJ 100 Matt here. The people who claim extremism or supremacy doesn't exist are really quiet after yesterday's tragedy. We've had two back-to-back now. There was another one. And yeah, I agree. Take your thoughts and prayers and shove it. Although I do like sending people the gift of like this big, dark, you know, satanic looking altar thing and saying thoughts and prayers. I love that one. Oh, Ranma's correct. Three, yeah. And then the thing is that people need, this is the other thing too. People need to look past their own selfishness. America is built on pure fucking selfishness. Me first. What does this do for me? Pull myself up, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I'm not helping you. But the moment that we start helping each other, the moment that we start thinking outside of our own narrow point of view, our own narrow, you know, blinders, you know, like they put on horses, blinders, you know, when you take off the blinders and you see that there are other people around you, when we start putting it together, it's not that hard of a burden when more people are shouldering it. When the rich white men of the world start looking out to the women and treating them with respect, look out to people who are of a different color than they are. Because I'll be perfectly honest now, this concept of race amongst people, I understand genetically that there indeed are some differences. You know, some people are more resistant to being sunburned. Some people are more resistant to other. But we are all human. Huh?
As you said, not me.
Well, me either.
I step out in the sun for 2 seconds. It's like, I got to burn. But, anyway,
but it was my example.
I don't mean to interrupt, but...
What they're doing is separating us by the visual result of our genes.
Yeah.
They're separating us by the parts of our body. They're separating us by whether we are neurotypical or neuroatypical like myself. It's going to stop when we can break those barriers, when we can respect those things that have formed these people, when we respect that, yes, you had a different upbringing than me because of these economic social factors that are affecting your life, because of how the government's trying to police you, because of demonization in media. But I'm not going to look at those things. I am going to see you as a person. I want to know your story, and I want to respect that. I believe in equity. Equality, you know, that thing where the people looking over the fence, right? You have the tall person who can see over the fence, and then you put the stool up. The thing is that you need to lower the fence so that everyone's going to be able to look over that fence the same way.
Now, why is there a fence? Yeah.
Well, that's a different story. But I'm getting way off. But
you're fine. I do want to acknowledge
I am impassioned about this. But I also feel very logical about it. For me, this should not be a question of emotion. This should not be a question of what your magic book says. And I say this as a practicing Jewish woman and by the way, I pissed off my mother because I asked about it, if carrying a pregnancy is going to negatively impact your quality of life, you will save your life by having the abortion. Ask your rabbi, though. Your rabbi may say something different. Mine said that. But I'm going to leave that there.
Okay.
Just respect people. The moment that you stop seeing women and start seeing human, just respect people. It's all it takes. Understand that the things that we go through, they are different than what you go through. We do have different needs. And access to abortion, if you cut that access, all it's going to mean is that there will be unsafe abortions. People will die, all because of you and your magic book.
I want to get to an earlier comment because I think it's a very apt comment, and it also has to do with a lot of this, you know, how the gaming industry is responding and this sort of thing. And I think this is worth reading. It's from SSG100 Matt earlier in the chat, who says, some companies are hesitant to be a part of the story after what happened to Disney, which I get. The thing is that we need folks in power to speak out when detrimental legislation comes through, because it's not going to stop. We can march and protest all we want, but the people in power move the needle. While I understand companies for not speaking out, but the folks and companies that do, they have my respect. Yeah, and I think that's why so many of us are frustrated that the Senate technically has a majority, but I also ask, do they? Because I don't think they do. I think we keep sitting here going, Democrats have the Senate and the House and the presidency. They don't have the Senate. On paper, they don't have the Senate. We all know that. But that's a whole other issue. That is getting political. That's a whole other thing. But
I do want to say one thing.
Quickly finish my thought, and then I'll go back to you.
Just I'm sorry.
That we need the Senate to do, we need the government to do something. We need and at least I saw the passion in Elizabeth Warren for sure. And I'm starting to see it in some of the other people as well. We need to take that into actual action and not just talk. Okay, I'm sorry, Dark Soccer, but I just want to finish that.
You know, one of the podcasts that I listen to regularly is Stuff Mom Never Told You. I adore Annie and Samantha. They're lovely people. But they had a conversation with Melita Easters, and it's a very good conversation, and they do break down a lot of those arguments in Alito's paperwork. And if you really want to hear more of a in-depth discussion about it, I highly recommend that episode. It was last Wednesday's episode. And, well, I mean, the podcast is amazing anyway, but I would definitely listen to that episode. There is a lot of good to be gathered from that one if you want to educate yourself very well.
No worries.
I had to look up the name of the episode.
Let's move on with the video games. And we're going to cleanse the palate a little bit. But yeah, great talk. But we're going to, while Dark Soccer cleanses the palate with a churro, see there. I'm jealous, by the way. That's one of the things I miss after diabetes is churros.
I made Dan go to Del Taco for me.
I haven't had a churro in I don't know how long. But anyway, one of these days, I'm almost, I can't believe this. I'm almost to 50 pounds lost. And when I get there, I'm 3 pounds away. When I get there, I might just have to go to a theme park and have a churro. Just one time. Anyway. All right. Let's cleanse the palate a little bit by talking about a real train wreck of a video game. And we'll go to the next story from Loki.
Yes. So there was a wonderful video game leak on 4chan that was the original 2001 build of Duke Nukem Forever. So this was the one that they showed the E3 videos for. And I may have been actually at E3 at one time.
It was.
It looks pretty good. I mean, honestly. But it was confirmed by George Broussard that it does appear to be the actual thing, although he made a point to, like, you really need to temper your expectations because there's not really any game to play. It's just some barely populated test levels and what they kind of showed off during E3. But honestly, what they showed off, like, even with this 2001 demo thing, looks pretty good. I'm hoping that someone can take this and, like, you know, flesh it out to a full-fledged 2001 Duke Nukem Forever game or something. But yeah. And if you want to check it out, you can actually play it because it has been uploaded to the Internet Archive.
But don't expect much of a game. Like, it's, but I think it's an interesting story in what you see at E3 versus reality. I think it's a very interesting sort of story with that.
Yeah, Apogee's founder Scott Miller said, looks like someone leaked a build of our Duke Nukem Forever from 2001. Anyone expecting much of a playable game will be disappointed. The game's brilliant trailer from that period definitely overrepresented what the game actually played like.
It's a very honest comment.
Yeah. Cool.
You know, I don't know. This is one of those things where it's like, you know, it's a little weird that something unpublished got leaked, but at the same time, you know, it's so old at this point, and I think there's obviously some fascinating stories there behind the development of this game. It's interesting. Bobby Blackwell says, was any of the content from this demo in the Gearbox Duke Nukem Forever? Didn't they pretty much hit the reset button on the game at some point during development? which I kind of think
they
is
did. This doesn't appear to be either.
You know what
so
I want to see is this.
Duke Nukem Forever, and this just looks more polished, which is really bad.
You know what I want to see is this, but for Final Fantasy 13 Versus. You know, before it became 15. I want, because like that's another one where it's like the trailer and the final game kind of aren't the same, you know, so I'd be very curious about that. Questbuster in chat says there was also a little drama when co-founder Scott Miller then blogged how Duke Nukem Forever failed and Broussard shot back because he felt as if he were thrown under a bus. Yeah. And SG100 Matt says they're really bracing our expectations for a 21-year-old demo. Just silly. Yeah, I'm like, we already, the game ended up not
Let's
being
put this
great.
Way.
So
that bar is pretty low to hit for Duke Nukem Forever. Like, we all play, some of us played Duke Nukem Forever, and it's like, you don't have to do much. Even if it's a few test levels, that might actually be better than the original Duke Nukem Forever.
Maybe it's the reverse than they think, and people seeing this demo will actually make people realize how much wasn't there and how much still needed to be done, you know,
well,
to get to where
like
they got.
Well, they have like those, there was some newer, I think 3D Realms is actually making the games. They had some newer FPS games that were done in that like kind of old Duke Nukem style. Like, I kind of wish they would just come back and make a new Duke Nukem game in that style, like the old Duke Nukem. None of this like, let's make it look modern. No. The old one. Make it like the old one.
All right. Well, something else that I wish they would come back and just make another of is F-Zero. But of course, as we've talked about the last couple weeks on the show, Reggie's going around doing a big book tour right now to support his book. And of course, a lot of people want to ask him about Nintendo. So in an interview that he was doing with VentureBeat, Reggie Fils-Aimé was asked, why no new F-Zero? And in a quote, Reggie says, why was F-Zero abandoned? The insight I would share is that at least during my tenure, and he's always very good about saying, I don't work for Nintendo anymore. I can only give you, you know, from my experience. We get it. We get it, Reggie. At least during my tenure, Nintendo developers were always experimenting with different gameplay styles, always thinking about where a unique experience could be applied back, either to an existing franchise or maybe creating a new franchise. My bet is that somewhere in the Kyoto development centers, some developers playing around with an idea that might be applied to F-Zero. It's never a situation, at least in my experience, where the company makes a conscious decision not to continue supporting XYZ franchise. Historically, it just hasn't worked that way, not when I was there. I don't know if it's intended, but do you know what I hear in that statement? Is that they couldn't find a way to make the Wii controller compelling for F-Zero. So there was no F-Zero Wii.
That sounds like it.
They couldn't find a way to make the secondary screen on Wii U compelling for F-Zero. So they didn't do F-Zero for the Wii U. We'll ignore the Nintendo Land segment. And so, but now we're what? We're on the Switch, and it's kind of like the Switch's compelling thing is that it's portable, and on the, like that shouldn't be the argument anymore. It's like almost like any other console. I mean, I guess you could say that the Joy-Con still detach and move around and all this stuff, but
yeah, but people are buying it for that gimmick. They're buying it for the portability. Yeah. Like Nintendo needs to understand, like, you don't need to utilize the Joy-Cons in just make them just controllers. Yeah. And then if someone wants to utilize that, then they can. It's just like, you know, if let's go with their argument here that they couldn't do anything groundbreaking with that. Nintendo also ignored their 3D component to the 3DS at some point. So, like, you know what? So what? Put out another game. You don't have to just... It's a racing game.
And Bayonetta doesn't do anything, but I'm not knocking a legendary series. I love Bayonetta. I will be getting Bayonetta 3 100%, but I don't expect that it's going to do funny things with the Joy-Cons and all that. It's just going to be a
solid fucking
game on Switch.
Honestly, when they've tried doing that, try to do funny things with the games, we got Excitebot's Trick Racing. Like, sometimes we don't need to put a new gimmick into it. Sometimes you can just make a quality game and have it run on your hardware, which is barely what some games can do nowadays on the Switch, because the Switch isn't all that powerful. But like, just make a quality F-Zero game. Make it look pretty, make it fast, make it, you know, the controls tight. Done. That's all you need to do.
Nintendo, to Nintendo's credit, when they do decide to make something compelling for the hardware, they typically knock it out of the park. And I would say Breath of the Wild is a shining example, which of course was a Wii U game. And I know most people think of it as a Switch game, but it was a Wii U game. And you know, everything that they do with this, the slate and everything just is, you know, but anyway, I digress. I agree with SSG 100 Matt in chat. So they're overthinking it. Just make a game already. It doesn't need to be that compelling. It's F-Zero. We'll buy it. And SSG 100 Matt said, so who at Nintendo thought Metroid Federation Force was compelling, asking for a friend? All of us. And Orange Wright says, an F-Zero GX port would be great. Yes, like honestly, just put out F-Zero GX with the AX stuff already unlocked, because you're not going to find those machines anymore, and those memory cards don't even work on the Switch anyway. And
right?
To most people, that is going to be brand fucking new content. Put out F-Zero GX AX in one package on the Switch. It's literally getting F-Zero GX, a GameCube emulator, to work on the Switch with a little flag set that the AX stuff is already unlocked. Like, I think there'd be a lot of people interested in that.
GameCube stuff on my Mac.
Yeah.
I doubt it would be very hard.
Yeah. I guess I'll go to RetroArch. All right. Anyway, we've talked about some classic games in this segment, so I think it's time to get into a real classic segment here on OLR.
Now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
But once a month, Dark Sakura does a classic handheld. So, Dark Sakura, what is the classic electronic handheld of the month?
Tamagotchi.
Oh, boy.
So, I always... kind of had the name wrong. I thought Tamagotchi was like for egg friend, as in Tomodachi, but instead it's actually like egg watch. So I was wrong. But it is a handheld digital pet keychain thing that was created of by two people. One was Yokoi Akihiro of Wiz and Maita Aki of Bandai. It was released by Bandai on November 23rd, 1996 in Japan, and in the US on May 1st, 1997. And it was a pretty big fad. I think everyone had one. Like, I even remember there was like the Pikachu one, remember? Like the little walker thing that was yellow. I have one of those somewhere. But anyway, the majority of the Tamagotchi were in these little egg-shaped video game things with, like, a couple of buttons on it. And so Bandai said the name is a portmanteau of Tamago, egg, and Uachi, as in watch. So I always thought it was for Tomodachi, but I'm wrong. Anyway, so... They both of these people actually won the 1997 IG Nobel Prize for Economics as the father and mother of the Tamagotchi. You could have like very simple little creatures in it that would evolve. You could discipline your Tamagotchi. If they were bad, you'd have to clean up their poo. They had a hunger meter. You had to feed them and train them and play with them, and you could check their age and their weight, like little pets. And you could give them a loaf of bread or a hamburger or a snack that was like candy or cake. And then you could fill up their happy meter by playing games with them and give them snacks. And if they needed to be disciplined, then you would scold them when they refuse to play or when they want to be fed at the wrong time. You know, like I said, you also have to clean up their poop. But they make a face before they take a poo. So you can activate a toilet icon and tell them to go potty. And then you can potty train them that way. So... if they get sick, they get a little skull icon, and they look unhappy, and then you can give them medicine. Sometimes you have to play more with them, or not play more, but give them more medicine to heal them. And usually they won't play or eat when they're sick. And so they go through different stages of their life cycle. Each stage is for a few amounts of days, depending on the model of Tamagotchi you have. And it plays like a little jingle when it hits a new stage and changes the pet's appearance. They can die because you didn't take care of them, or they hit old age or sickness, or predator eats them.
I didn't know there
was a predator.
I didn't know there was a predator.
As like a later version. But they have baby, child, teenager, and adult, and the later Tamagotchi added seniors. But if you don't take care of them, they can die. If they get super old, they can die. And they can reproduce. Also, some of the Japanese Tamagotchi have a ghost and headstone when the pet dies. But the English,
morbid.
The English version shows an angel at death. Or a UFO. And then a pet laying an egg so it returns to its home planet. There are also the different versions. There's the Itamago, that of course is connects to like this website Flash game, and it gives you a code so that you can log into it. And then there's also other models like the Tamagotchi for You and the Tamagotchi for You Plus that can connect to other Tamagotchi units, and also smartphones and tablets using NFC communication. But they do not have infrared, so that made them sell poorly. There's also the different versions. The Mesuchi and Otsuchi Tamagotchi could have marriage and offsprings, and then that came with the Plus connection and the other subsequent models. So a boy Magotchi and a lady Magotchi, I just made up those words, can get their groove on and make baby Magotchi. You can also choose to have them marry a random pet brought in by the matchmaker. Like, what century is this, please? Thank you. You know, matchmaker, make me a match. Fiddler on the Roof, hello? Anyway.
Yes.
The,
No, I was saying, yes, I do remember Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah. That's my mom's favorite movie, by the way. But you can, keep breeding your Tamagotchi, and then their parents will leave them behind. Oops. There's the Chojinsei Enjoy Tamagotchi also has character families or groups, and these are classifications for the characters that you can obtain in the game, mainly by appearance. They also have certain skills that go with them. The character of one group cannot grow into an adult of a different group. And if two pets of different groups marry and have an egg, the baby will be the one of the female group. In Tamagotchi Mix, the latest one, there is a notable change that the Tamagotchi will share genetics from both parents. I think there's an active store in Harajuku that you can still buy Tamagotchi. There's so many different versions, just so many different mechanics in each of them. There's also the Tamagotchi Pix that has a camera installed. And you get a pet based on your skin tone and age of your face.
Huh.
And then you can take pictures and take your pet on a walk. So there are also video games. So we are getting into Tamagotchi video games. God, there's so many different Tamagotchi releases, though.
You
like,
don't have to
hold
read
on
them
just
all.
A second. No, I'm looking at the various lists of them.
How about some chat comments while you look that over real quick?
Fuck's sake, there's a bunch.
SS200 Matt says, I remember friendships being ruined in school because friends would lend their Tamagotchi to their friends for the weekend, only to have them dead by Monday.
Home huge Tamagotchi.
Gadats in chat has the crying emoji saying, I remember accidentally letting one die. Yeah, I'm sure dead Tamagotchis were very traumatic for an entire generation.
The last new Tamagotchi release was the Moto, I think it's ID or ID, Ochite Tamagotchi Station Plus, that only exists with the Tamagotchi ID, and you can communicate three Tamagotchi IDs and have a dance battle. There's also a Tamawaki that's a walkie-talkie Tamagotchi.
Several people in chat are talking about the Pikachu. It wasn't, I mean, basically it was,
it was like the
rip-off.
Pikachu Walker,
yeah, a Pikachu Pocket or whatever.
Yeah, that was it. And then they did a color one.
Hmm.
Now me, I was a Digimon fan.
Mm-hmm.
I always ended up with, Devimon for some reason. Devimon. I always did. But there were a handful of games, and I think I can name the games pretty quickly. So for Game Boy, there was Tamagotchi, Game de Haken Tamagotchi, Game de Haken Tamagotchi V2, Tamagotchi Otsuchi to Metsuchi. On Nintendo 64, Tamagotchi 64, Mina de Tamagotchi World. PlayStation had Hoshi de Haken Tamagotchi. Saturn had Sega Saturn de Haken Tamagotchi Park. Super Famicom had Tamagotchi Town. The DS had Tamagotchi Connection Corner Shop, Corner Shop 2. We had Party On. The DS had Corner Shop 3. We had Tamagotchi no Furifuri Kagekidan. More for the DS. All the rest of these are on the DS. Tamagotchi no Nakiri Channel, Tamagotchi no Nakiri Challenge, Tamagotchi Collection, and Ochi Mainichi Tamagotchi. That was for 3DS. And then there were a bunch of iPhone, Android, and a Windows 95 Tamagotchi CD-ROM.
CD-ROM.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there were so many Tamagotchi-themed things. There's a Tamagotchi Boeing 777. there was the Bandai Tamagotchi statue that was in front of their headquarters in Taito. Big Tamagotchi store, the Tamagotchi anime. That was the where the Dehaken series came from. Anime TV Dehaken Tamagotchi. It basically means found on anime TV Tamagotchi. There was also Saiko Tamagotchi, which is, hey, let's go, Tamagotchi. All kinds of stuff. There was animated videos. There's music. All kinds of shit. And then there were the other... I'll talk about them. There was a Pokemon Pikachu digital pet. There was a Tatsuki Bako, which also came out by Bandai. There is a psychological effect named after Tamagotchi called Tamagotchi Effect. I'm now very curious about that. It has to deal with emotional attachments with machines, robots, or software agents.
Oh, wow.
There's one called Pull. Pixel Chicks, one for girls. Finfin on Teo the Magic Planet. There was Gigapets. I remember Gigapets. I had a Gigapet too. That was by Tiger. And then, of course, Bandai also made Digimon. Like, all these people who were trying to say Tamagotchi and Digimon competing, blah, 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 they made Digimon too, as well.
The money all went to the same account.
And Digimon gave us the fantastic anime, of which I only count two of them, and then Digimon Try, because they were amazing. Digimon Zero 2 is the best of the series. I will leave it there. But I have my Digimon, and he always turned into a Devilmon.
All right.
That's the end.
Well, Tamagotchi, the classic electronic handheld of the month, and it really, I mean, I think many of you know this, obviously, but because it defined a generation in many ways, as far as gaming goes. So a little look back on Tamagotchi. And how many of you let a pet die from neglect was Tamagotchi and learned that hard lesson.
Well,
so.
If it was the Pikachu one, Pikachu would just run away.
Yeah, yeah. Pikachu never died. All right.
Pikachu never dies.
We're running a little long, so I want to make sure we get through our next few segments. So let's just get right into our rapid fire news and quickly talk about some other news in the industry. So, Loki.
Yeah, Starfield's got delayed. So, you know, that was expected. But yeah, it's coming out now in 2023. So that's not going to be coming as well. And Redfall, which is a game I completely forgot about, I guess the new Arcane Austin game, that is also coming out in the first half of 2023.
You know, I was looking forward to Starfield. I really want to play Starfield, but I don't want him to crunch. I want the game to be good. Like, it is what it is. Whatever. I just kind of wonder what Microsoft's holiday tentpole is now, because I thought this was going to be it. So does that mean Fable's ready for this year? Or are they going to try to invest in something else? I don't know. I'm just curious what the marketing strategy ends up being now that this gets delayed, because I think this was their big tentpole for the holiday. So kind of curious where that goes now.
Yeah, no idea. And then in other news, data miners have dug through Nintendo Switch Sports and have found that there are 28 unlockable collections so far in that. And the 28 collections, meaning possibly over a year's support for the game, half of them have been named, and the other half have placeholder names. There's one for each sport, as well as random themes like ice cream, cute, and luxury. I have no idea what the collections are for. Is that like clothing or something in that?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was actual sports games. I was like, oh, man, they're adding 28 more sports things. Oh, yeah, it appears to be. It's just like cosmetics. Woohoo, cosmetics, yeah.
Hey, some people are into that.
That's true.
Some people have a bunch of cosmetics for survivors in Dead by Daylight, and they don't play Survivor. I don't know who that is, though.
No.
That person's a bitch.
I would never out them on this show. All right. Anyway, speaking of said individual, Dark Soccer, what do you have for us next?
Okay. So, Alan Wake Remastered is coming to the Switch this fall, digital only, and runs natively on Switch hardware, so it's not emulated. Woot. And then Multiversus has closed the alpha, has a closed alpha set for May 19th through the 27th. So if you wanna play it, better go to the website.
All right, get on it. Let's travel.
I'll sign up for it. Why not?
Let's travel around the world and check out some release dates. What's coming out a little sooner than Starfield? Loki, what's coming out this week in the U.S.?
Not a whole lot. So we've got Deadcraft on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. And then Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song with excellent box art with a bloody swan. It's like a swan with blood splatters on it. That's it.
All right. Well, let's go to Japan and check out the releases there. We have on the Switch, Snow Brothers Special is out on the Nintendo Switch, which I think is like an old school arcade game that's still going on.
Snow Brothers.
Yeah, Snow Brothers. All these years
later.
Oh,
we love Snow Brothers in this house.
Yeah, no, there's a new Switch game coming out in Japan this week. I don't know if this is something getting ported over here, but it's that same arcade series from back in the day with a cartoony look now. So that's interesting. So that is coming out this week. We have Taiko Rishiden 5 DX is out as well on the Switch this week. That is a remake, though, by the way. Let's see. I think those are the big releases on the Switch this week in Japan. Checking out the PlayStation 5. The Ascent has a release in Japan this week, even though that is still the English localized version. And that is really the big release on the PS5 this week. So we'll move on to Europe. Dark Sakura.
Just a sec, because my browser decided to be a butthole. Okay, there we go. So we also have on the 19th, we have Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song. This has like different artwork on it, I guess, for Europe. We have Call of the Sea for PlayStation. We have Castaway Paradise for Switch. Luxo XXL on Switch. On the PlayStation, Angry Alligator. I'm sorry, on PlayStation, Angry Alligator on Switch, Jigsaw Fun, Wonderful Nature, and also Jigsaw Fun, Greatest Cities, PlayStation Switch, Mickey, Storm, and the Cursed Mask. We also have King Leo. Also on the 19th, End Zone, A World Apart Survivor Edition. And on the 20th, we have Dolmen on PlayStation and Xbox.
All right. We have some more news stories coming your way. In fact, we have a few extra tonight because I screwed up making the show roll tonight. But hey, that's all right. You get a little extra OLR tonight. So why don't we get into it, Loki?
Yeah, so there's a class action lawsuit against WADA Games for their slow response,
not,
I should say.
Not EWADA Games. Not
EWADA.
Not to be confused with a legendary...
No. Yeah. WADA Games, the company that does video game grading, there was a few articles a while back about, like, you know, Super Mario 64 selling for a large amount of money and stuff like that. I mean, aside from all of the, you know, heritage auction shenanigans that they've been doing since both companies, I think, are owned by the same individuals, or they're, you know, working together to basically inflate the collector game market.
Oh, yeah, this whole thing.
So there's that, but this is not actually about that. It's about how long it's taking them to grade these games, because WADA charges fees to expedite the process and a commission of 2% on games valued over $2,500. However, their expedite process isn't very expedited, and some folks are getting their games back after being in their possession for 18 months, which is ridiculous. And mind you, that these guys, absolute geniuses that they are at WADA Games, are even opening up grading for modern games now. So, like, how are you going to do that when you can't even handle, like, what you have already, you know, that's been, like, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to pull that off when they can't even grade the stuff that they've had for, like, several years now. I'm sure that there's going to be more investigations into them outside of this, but, you know, obviously, I would say that them being slow to grade games is the least of my concerns as far as this company. It's more of the artificial inflation of the value of the market, because they're selling to themselves. They are basically grading. They're saying that the games are worth this much and then selling it to themselves so that the market goes, oh, wow, Mario's worth that much now? I'm going to sell sealed copies and stuff. And so it's a big old mess. But, you know, at least they're getting in trouble for just not being able to fill their basic, you know, their basic services that they've offered.
It's that whole we knew something was fishy with that auction thing from the very beginning. And now I like that this kind of lays it out, though, with that, you know, big length of time and all that stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see what the courts do about this whole thing. So but chances are your copy of Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt isn't worth as much as some of these things would leave you to believe it is.
Yeah,
but there are some video games that are worth plenty of money, like the stadium events, and that's like before Nintendo bought it from Bandai. That's legit, but yeah, it's hard to find those anymore. All right, anyhow, let's move on and talk about you know, kind of the newer end of games and games coming out on subscription services. Namely, another comment on why PlayStation 5 first party games are not coming out on PlayStation Plus, because a lot of folks are saying, oh, PlayStation Plus is the answer to Xbox Game Pass. And it's not the equivalent. We know that. Yeah. It is something had to do. What?
What's hilarious is, like, literally until you mentioned PlayStation Plus again, I completely forgot that they had that service out there. Like, I remember Games Pass, but, like, I completely forgot PlayStation Plus.
Well,
their PlayStation had the PlayStation Now stuff and all that. I completely forgot that they even happened.
In a couple of weeks, the whole relaunch is coming. So, you know, look out for that with the cloud streaming. So, you know, look out for that.
I'm so looking out for that.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. Anyhow, the chief financial officer of Sony, Hiroki Totoki, didn't mention Microsoft by name, but we all know about Xbox Game Pass, right? So in a comment on a recent financial call, and this is a translation by Genki JPN on Twitter. If we distribute first-party games on the subscription services, we may need to shrink the investment needed for quality products. That will deteriorate the first-party title quality. That is our concern. Our current thinking is to have development costs and appropriate R&D investment for quality products, which will improve the platform and improve business in the long run. Now, I know not everybody's going to like this comment I'm about to say, but I'm telling you it's the truth. Sony feels that they can play it this way because the market is letting them. Because Sony is still leading in many ways over Microsoft. Microsoft has been having to bring something unique and a new value type of thing to the table because they have been lagging behind ever since the Xbox One launch was fucked so hard by Don Matrick and, you know, a lot of the incompetency that surrounded the release of that system. Even if some of it ironically was ahead of its time, it didn't match the current time. And we all know the Xbox One and the mandatory Kinect. That was the biggest mistake Microsoft ever made, was mandating Kinect in the Xbox One. But I digress. Is that it put them behind in the race, and they've been having to play catch up ever since. So I think Sony is able to kind of get away with this, because if they put God of War out for $60, they put Horizon Forbidden West out for $60, they put these types of things out for $60.
70.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, $70. Excuse me. Yes, $70. People are still going to buy it, and they're going to buy it in mass.
Well, I think they're also playing it conservatively, because they
I think they can
basically put this out now the way it is without the first party titles in there, and then if Game Pass just utterly destroys them, they could put out the first party titles and go, look, fans, we've been listening to you. See, we love you guys. We put out first party titles now.
I don't think it would be like that at all. I think first party titles are still going to go on the service 18 months after they release, when they would be given away as PlayStation Plus games anyway.
But that would be stupid though. But like, it's going to be, this may not be a problem right now, but they're thinking it's very much short-sighted, because, you know, Microsoft has all of these studios now. And I mean, once these studios start developing stuff and like putting out these products, that's going to be a problem, because right now they have some really quality games over their first party for at Sony, and Microsoft has had a few things, but it's been like kind of hit or miss with some of that stuff. But then they're going to really start cranking out those first party titles, and they're not going to be able to make that argument anymore. Yeah. And it's just going to be, but they could still pivot and adjust their service. But
yeah, they
could
always pivot later if they feel the need to, or maybe
Think it's going to make a difference. So at that point,
we also know Microsoft is no longer as much about Xbox as they are about Game Pass. They want to sell more Game Pass subscriptions than they do Xboxes. That is Microsoft's like environment now. And that's fine. I don't think Sony is at that same pivot yet, because again, they're still profitable in the hardware industry. They're still profitable, you know, so the market is not forcing them to evolve. And quite frankly, I think when PS5 VR comes out, it's just going to dig their heels in even more. I'm not sure they're going to pivot as quick as we all think they ought to. I think a pivot for them to start including first party titles is going to be years away. And even then, I don't think it's going to happen the way you said, Loki, where it's like, oh, we're listening. It's going to be one game. Suddenly there's one big must-have game that goes on the service day one. And then that's like the thing that starts the floodgate. But I think we're years away from that.
Hey.
I don't think that happens anytime soon.
Because they've been trying to make PlayStation Now work for the longest time, and I don't think that's been really adopted. I don't think anyone cares about it.
Well, actually, SJ100 Matt says, there's a story that came out that more folks are subscribed to PlayStation Plus, 48 million subscribers per Sony, than Game Pass, 25 million per Microsoft, but only about 3.2 million for PS Now. The market is off-centered now, but it will be a war soon enough. While your numbers, I'm not going to debate the numbers, SJ100 Matt, because that's very true. There's a huge element here that people tend to overlook when they're putting those numbers side by side, and that is the entire country of Japan. Because Microsoft has not penetrated Japan, at all.
Yeah,
the way that they've tried to for years and basically gave up on.
Did you say, though, that they're comparing PlayStation Plus with Xbox Live?
PlayStation Plus with Game Pass.
Okay, well, you can't compare those. Because PlayStation Plus, you need to have for online access to PlayStation games. So if you're completely ignoring Xbox Live, your numbers are skewed.
Yeah. I'll be curious what those numbers look like in the US and in Europe about 6 months, like we'll say this holiday season. I want to see what those numbers look like this holiday season in the US and Europe. No disrespect to Japan. Love y'all. But we all know Microsoft is a non-factor in Japan and continues to be. I'm not sure why that is. I would have thought Phil Spencer would have tried to remedy that by now. But that might, knowing him and the way he's playing the long game, that might be something he's going to address with the next Xbox, whatever that is, the Series Z. I don't know, whatever that is. But we all know Microsoft's a non-factor in Japan, so you can't put those numbers next to each other. So I'd be curious what it looks like in the U.S. and Europe in about 6 months. So. Mike Deft in chat says, I'm more compelled to keep Game Pass than I am PlayStation Plus. Same. I still don't have a PlayStation 5. Again, I'm not a Sony hater by any means. I love Sony. I don't need one to play the current games because they all still play on PS4. I will buy a PlayStation 5 when Final Fantasy 16 is out.
I'm still thinking of getting a Stream Deck.
Oh yeah, this you mean Steam Deck?
Steam Deck. Sorry, yeah, I have Stream Decks. Yeah. I have two of those. No, I want. I'm leaning back toward wanting a Steam Deck.
I want one of those now too, but I like my PlayStation 5 reservation. Now I want to wait for a hardware refresh because those things are only going to get better with time. So that's kind of where my brain's at currently. Dijarama S says the Xbox Series S and X is actually selling well in Japan. I think that's an easy headline to write, like, because honestly, selling one console is selling more than zero.
No, he's actually correct. They are actually pretty good sellers there. It was the initial Xbox. With the current ones there, they're actually doing better at catering to the market.
But what's the rate? I mean, and this is, I don't expect anyone to have these numbers handy, but again, I it's selling well because the others didn't sell. So I would be curious what the ratio is of Xbox to Sony in Japan versus the ratio of Xbox to Sony here and in Europe. Because I bet it's still pretty low. But I mean, good on Microsoft.
2.3 million units in, hold on, let me get to it. I hate cookies so much.
Except real cookies. Real cookies are great, unless they have stealth raisins.
Apparently the Xbox 360 actually sold a bit better, but right now sales for the Xbox Series XS was at 142,024. But this is as of March this year. It was the Xbox 360 was the best seller in Japan.
But, you know, that's...
And that mostly has to do with Dead or Alive and Star Ocean.
But that's compared to millions of PlayStations. So I feel like it's not a fair comparison to Japan. I mean, good that Microsoft's gaining a little ground, because I think they've earned that ability. But I think it will take a little more investment in Japanese-developed games to get there. Microsoft isn't buying any Japanese studios yet. I know everybody expects them to. But anyway, that's a topic for another day. Let's move on. Let's talk about something else with Microsoft and Dark Sakura. Something else they're doing well, right?
Well, you know, I'm all about accessibility. Mm-hmm. And we did have their adaptive mouse their adaptive controller that we had talked about, so that, you know, people could play their games and enjoy everything on Xbox. Well, now they have an extended range of accessibility accessories. They have actually been partnering with the disability community to make these and make them work. There's an adaptive mouse, adaptive buttons, and an adaptive hub so that you can augment these items with 3D printed accessories so that you can customize them in ways that will best fit you. For example, for the adaptive mouse, you can customize it with a thumb support and a tail extension or 3D printed tails. With the adaptive hub, it can replace or augment a traditional keyboard. They had one of the adaptive buttons that was concave, and it had like different switches on them, and the person who they showed using it was actually born without her right forearm and was using it pretty effectively. The mouse actually looks kind of comfortable, except I mean, for those who are on watching live, I have to use a thumb trackball. But I mean, it's a step in the right direction. The thing is that these do need to be affordable for the community, and not just like they need to have some sort of subsidy for the I would say, like, lower income, or maybe even for businesses to have these to adapt to their employees who may have a physical disability.
That's something Mike Def points out in chat, too, is that good on Microsoft for this, but those adaptive peripherals need to be a bit cheaper, or more affordable, rather.
Yeah. And they're, like, I was looking at a few other people with other limitations And these things look pretty good. I mean, I have to say, it's a little bit sad that they are just now doing something like this. Other companies in the computer industry that I shall not name have had switch controls and other adaptive technologies out well before this, but I think it's a good start for them.
All right, I look forward to I'd like to try some of these. It seems really interesting. All right, let's move on to our next story from Loki.
Yeah, so we talk about all these other companies having allegations of worker harassment and whatnot. Well, we talked a little bit about Nintendo, I think it was a few weeks ago, how there was some former employees that filed a National Labor Relations Board complaint against Nintendo, alleging that they had surveilled, coerced, and retaliated against the individuals. But of course, they have been very quiet as far as acknowledging any of this stuff. So we're waiting, I guess, to see what Nintendo does with this. I don't know. Like, basically, they're saying that, you know, Doug Bowser, I guess, made a comment, but not really necessarily addressing it, saying that, you know, like many of you, the executive leadership team and I find that many of these points troubling, and we're working closely to reviewing the content. That Nintendo's executives added that the company has a zero tolerance for inappropriate conduct, including harassment, discrimination, or intimidation. Yeah, but you say that, but, like, I don't know. But is it actually being done?
Yeah, it's a good reminder that, like, you know, we have to, like, typically the news cycle, it's like, you know, oh, it's all over everywhere, and then a lot of companies will kind of ignore it until it goes away. So it's like this kind of coming back kind of reminds people, hey, wait a minute, Nintendo hasn't really done anything. But I wonder if it's going to end up, because didn't a legal thing come out of that, I thought? So I wonder if it's not going to be something that...
Oh, yeah, they have the complaint. Illegal. I don't know if they filed a lawsuit yet, but, yeah, like, well, it would be up for that board to, like, the governing body to investigate them. And if they found something, then, you know, I would assume it would be, like, Activision.
Well, and Rama has a great point, too. This is a lot with the temp agency. So Rama says that's because a lot of this is being handled by temp agencies, and they're blowing smoke up Nintendo's ass. And I think that's absolutely true. That's a very unique element to this situation, is that, you know, and we talked at length about the whole, you know, struggle of the temp workers, especially in the gaming industry, you know, a few weeks ago when this first came up. But yeah, it is another interesting little, because it allows Nintendo to kind of pass the buck, even though it's still your workplace, Nintendo. It's still your, you can can do or not do whatever you want. Anyway, all right, well, let's talk about something I think a lot of people are looking forward to. Dark Sakura.
Well, I watched the trailers. I have thoughts.
What trailers?
For Resident Evil live action series on Netflix. It does not seem like it follows any established canon other than having things in common, like locations and zombies. But it could be good as long as I tell myself it's not Resident Evil. It looked like it would be a good show. This is also not to be confused with the adaptation, the CG adaptation that came out on Netflix last year starring Leon.
Which is not bad.
I need to watch it. I've watched the CG movies, The Degeneration. I mostly got that because one of my favorite singers did the end song from it. And then, there's also that live action movie reboot that has nothing to do with Netflix coming out. So we'll see. I don't know, but it looks good as long as it's not Resident Evil.
But I have to know, does Master Chief have sex in it?
What does that have to do with Resident Evil?
Because the Halo TV series is going on right now, too.
So the joke is that it's the Halo TV series, the I don't know if it's a showrunner, somebody that's high up in the process of making that show basically bragged that, like, we didn't even pay attention to the games. We didn't find out any information about it whatsoever because we wanted to craft our own unique storyline. And it sucks. It's absolutely terrible because they didn't, you know, follow any of the lore or anything that has to do with the show. Whereas this also looks kind of similar, that it's like, well, it's sort of Resident Evil, but it's not really Resident Evil type of thing.
It sounds like it might be a thing that just explores something the games have it. Because Tiger Claw says, I think this live action series mostly focuses on Albert Wesker's kids. Well, is that something that the games have released?
So he didn't have kids in the game. He was alone.
Yeah. So it's like, then that's a whole other thing. It's like trying to.
How many times did he die?
It's trying to craft a new part of the universe that hasn't really been explored, which the inverse I can think of, because we usually see that done games for movies. And I think of like the Jurassic Park Telltale game from a few years ago, where they tried to turn the. Do you remember the very first Jurassic Park? Nedry he stole the embryos from the other company or whatever, mm-hmm. He stole the embryos from Jurassic Park, and then when he died, the can fell into the river or whatever it was, right? And that was the last you saw of it. Well, the PC games kind of try to build a whole storyline out of what happened to that can, and that's where the PC games are. So that way you weren't expecting Laura Dern, because which is a shame, because Laura Dern should be in everything. But you weren't expecting that because this is a whole other part of the universe that hadn't really been explored. But I should also point out, those games weren't as well received as most of Telltale's other games. So,
So save though that as a Marvel Comics fan,
mm-hmm.
I'm okay with alternate universes.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it tells a good story.
I'm definitely okay with multiverses after seeing Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I hear if I
need to see that.
It's so I'll go see it again. You want to go?
Okay, let's go see it.
For me to understand, isn't that funny? I won't watch Doctor Strange, but I'll go see Everything Everywhere All at Once again. That's so me. I'll see one movie in the theater 500 times, Rocky Horror, but I can't be bothered to see like five new movies in the theater.
But people are saying that it reminds them of Drag Me to Hell, and I hated that movie. I left that movie with regret.
I've never seen Drag Me to Hell. I liked it. It reminded me. I follow all the MCU stuff, but it's a very Sam Raimi movie. It reminded me a lot of people.
I like Sam Raimi movies, but I hated Drag Me to Hell.
Is it true you have to watch all of WandaVision to get it? Because I haven't seen any of that.
No, not necessarily. I mean, the only thing from WandaVision that you have to know is that she manifests her kids in WandaVision, and then obviously because it was a spell that she did and she decided to free the town she was in, her kids are gone, and so now she's looking for her kids.
E3VL just said the exact same thing. What were you gonna say, Darsakra?
If you read old Avengers comics 2, the same thing happened there, kind of, sort of, except they ended up being part of Mephisto, which I don't think has anything to do with movies.
No.
I haven't read any comics since I was in high school.
I know it has to do with the Darkhold.
Yes, the Darkhold is very much in it.
Darkhold fucks shit up.
Some of you are going to take issue with what I'm about to say, but I don't give a fuck. Like, this was years ago. This is teenage Rob. I really read DC way more than Marvel back in the day because I was a big Batman fan. So, and I like Superman. So, sorry about it. But 15-year-old Rob makes no apologies. All right. Speaking of a company that won't make any apologies, Loki.
Well, I don't know if this is necessarily about apologies, but it's Epic Games has managed to get a cheat seller to pay them for undisclosed damages.
I left out a very important word in the story sidebar. Man, I made mistakes tonight. That's all right. It's supposed to say Fortnite cheat seller must pay Epic Games. Go ahead.
Fortnite must pay Epic Games.
I know.
Games.
I'm like, that doesn't make
any
sense.
They do that every time.
No shit. They do that
all
the time. Oh, God. People are looking at the thumbnail
Epic
for
must
this
pay
show
Epic.
Right now thinking we're just not with it. I'm going to change that right now.
That's like that Coke commercial where they're suing themselves. Apparently there is a guy that was online, Brandon Despotakis, I guess. He had infringed on Epic Games copyright and violated, I guess, the EULA for Fortnite because he was creating aimbots designed to help people cheat in Fortnite, and also accounts loaded with skins and V-Bucks. And apparently he had to, of course, they ordered him to stop selling the software and froze his assets, which he had, looks like, about $250,000 worth of assets. And of course, you know, he now has to pay them. And what's nice, though, is they're actually going to be donating that money to Child's Play, because they don't need his pittance when, you know, they're making their epic money with Fortnite.
Boy, oh boy. I mean, this Fortnite just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and it's no surprise that, you know, people want to try to make a quick buck off it one way or other, whether it's cheating or whatever it is. It's just interesting that now this kind of stuff kind of like ends up in court, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be resolution through our expedient justice system in about 16 years. So we'll see.
Australia.
We'll see what. Oh, it's Australia. Oh, never mind. Then something might really happen.
So they've already filed the court documents earlier this month. So That's already done.
All right. I got one more story before we get to the listener roundtable. And speaking of our Discord server, where you can actually join if you want to give us a call tonight in our green room over at vognetwork.com/Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord. Another thing you can do in Discord is you can talk to us throughout the week about stories that are going on. And this is one that was getting a lot of chat going on in our channel. And this is one of those... it's a mess, and it's a mess of someone kind of put their foot in their mouth, and they quickly regretted it because they learned how fast sometimes news can spread like wildfire. So let me try to summarize what was going on here. So Daniel Lindholm, who is a composer for the Street Fighter series, he made an offhanded comment that Fei Long is never going to come back to the series. He was doing a YouTube Q&A, which it's down, but you know, once on the internet, always on the internet. And he said that, so he went on YouTube to do like an Ask Me Anything About Street Fighter. I worked on the soundtrack, which he should have kept his answers to music and soundtrack. Although, well, to be fair, somebody kind of gotcha'd him a little bit with this question, I think. But I just think he should have known what roads not to go down in his answer. So... a character that I know we won't see at all, and there's been a lot of discussion about it. I mentioned earlier a character I would like to rewrite the music for, so that part is true, would be Fei Long. I do have other sources, not only Capcom, but friends of mine in the U.S. who are very close friends with the Lee family, and they have basically said that any kind of resemblance to Mr. Bruce Lee is now omitted for comedic effect, comic stuff. It needs to be honorable. That's why we won't see Fei Long again ever. And he really put his foot in his mouth on that, because now he's saying was speaking on a hypothetical language, or excuse me, a hypothetical level. And, he had sources close to the Lee family, but not really from Capcom. And, here's the thing though. And this is the part that that doesn't click for me. The Bruce Lee, with all respect to the Lee family and the, you know, the cinematic legend that Bruce Lee and for many of us, you know, Jason Lee were. They don't really get a say, because we have the right to have parodies. You know, that's part of free speech and having parody. We're talking about Weird Al earlier in this show. He's allowed to cover other people's songs with his own lyrics because it's parody. He gets,
but he does respect them enough to ask.
As I was about to say, he does get permission. And he doesn't put it out unless he gets that permission. I think with one exception, he put out that Gaga parody, but that was a whole other thing because Gaga never said, I don't want to do it. It was her people. And when she kind of found out, she was like, I wish they'd told me about this because I see it as a rite of passage and I would have absolutely said yes. So, but I digress. My point is he does get permission. He doesn't have to. He just does that because he's actually a nice guy in the industry, but he doesn't have to. But you've probably all heard the buzz about Coolio didn't care for it at first, but they've made nice since then. Okay, let's not drag that out another 20 years. And there have been people that have said no. Michael Jackson said no to a black or white parody, although some of Weird Al's most known parodies are of Michael Jackson's songs, like Eat It and things like that, right?
Because of the message of the song, and also Paul McCartney wouldn't let him do chicken pot pie.
Right, right.
Because he's a vegetarian.
So, but Weird Al could do those things without, and we've seen many drag queens do parodies with, like Lady Bunny will do songs with extremely explicit song lyrics in the place, and she can do it because it's parody.
So Lady Bunny and her collection of wigs.
So my point is, I from the start, I was looking at this going, I mean, with all respect, and maybe it is a respect thing. Maybe Capcom did go to, but they don't have to at the end of the day. So that from the start was a little bit like, what's going on with this? I don't know. So anyway, I'm reading the Weird Al discourse in chat, but it's interesting. Eminem was okay with the song, but not the music video, says Bobby Blackwolf. I didn't know about that one. That's interesting.
Yeah. And Bobby, couch potato.
And Bobby Blackwolf said, Coolio never said yes. His people said yes. It was the opposite Gaga issue. The people made, same issue. The people made the decision without consulting the artist. But anyway, I digress. My point is, asking Bruce Lee is a nice thing to do, but they don't have to do it. Nobody needs permission to parody Bruce Lee because he's not Bruce Lee. He's Fei Long. So there's that too. But anyway.
And also it never happened.
Yeah. And also it never happened. So by the way, Shannon Lee, who is Bruce Lee's daughter, came out on the official Bruce Lee account to say, we never made any comments of this nature. We have no idea who at Daniel Lindholm. And I majorly respect the outright tagging. Like I'm not gonna snitch tag. I'm gonna tag you so you see it. We have no idea who this guy says his close friends of the family are, but his comments are entirely false surrounding the Bruce Lee family. And I think our person in question here, Daniel Lindholm, you know, who's now blaming the podcasts and the YouTube media and all that and Twitter for just running with this. It's like, no, dude, you said it. I mean, did you think it was a news story when you said it? No. But did you go on YouTube saying, hey, I worked on Street Fighter, ask me anything, thinking that nobody was going to, if you said something of this nature, that like Fei Long's never going to be in it again? Here's what you should have said. A character that I know we won't see at all, there's been a lot of discussion about it. I mentioned earlier a character I would like to rewrite the music for would be Fei Long. Actually, he wouldn't have said we won't see it all. He should have just said, a character I would rewrite the music for would be Fei Long. Just like all of you, I really hope we see him again soon. I wonder if there's reasons why we haven't seen him. I hope they're able to work it out. Even that, you honestly don't even need the second half. Just say,
I would have just been like, soon. I'd like to do Fei Long's music.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, and tell us what you like about Fei Long's music or what you would do, what your interpretation would be. That's it.
What he should have said, honestly, is like, it's been a Fei Long since we've seen Fei Long time since we've seen him. I wish we'd see him back in the game again. You need to throw in the pun, always the pun.
Good night, everyone, and thanks for listening to OLR. SJ 100 Matt says, here's the thing. You can say what you want, but remember, when you speak about the company, you're a contractor or just a regular employee. You're still speaking for the company. Your words carry weight, represent the company, and your words can damage the company. Don't be surprised if that company doesn't invite you back if you try to speak for them. So on behalf of Vogue Network, I would like to say, fuck raisins.
Raisins are terrible.
What have California raisins ever done to you?
They taste bad.
All right, I'm totally kidding. If people don't see the joke in that, I don't know what to tell you. All right. Anyhow. All right, so yes, be careful if you're going to do an Ask Me Anything about a video game. Don't get gotcha'd, and don't try to do this whole, like, I have a friend of a friend, because, like, it's so obvious. Something got lost in translation. Dude, somebody told you they were a close friend of the Bruce Lee family when they were nothing like that. They were nothing of the sort. They ran into them at a convention once or something and asked an offhanded question that they filled in the blanks to. Yeah, exactly right. E3VL, playing telephone.
Yeah. My uncle is Bruce Lee, and he works at Nintendo, and he said that he's not going to be in Street Fighter anymore.
Yes.
I'm reminded of a quote of yours, Loki. The ow, I shot myself in the foot. How did that happen?
All right. Let's get to the listener roundtable. We invite your chat comments with further questions, your calls on Discord, and any emails to participate at orangeloungeradio.com if there's any emails. This may be
emails.
A quick segment tonight. Oh, no, we do have people in the green room. All right. Let's try to get quickly to some
of these
calls.
We don't have any emails.
Okay, so let's do some quick calls. I'm going to get to it. Let's bring some folks here live on the air. Hi, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
imagine Zaku. Oh my god,
Zaku! I haven't heard from you in forever.
Holy crap!
Yeah, it's been forever.
Have you come to serenade us with your dulcet tones?
Maybe. I am just finally, yeah, I'm finally, you know, able to do this like on a regular ship. Sorry.
No, it's all good. It's good to hear from you. We're a little pressed for time tonight, so I don't want to be rude or anything. It is great to hear from you.
No, of course.
First, I have to ask, Microsoft Flight Simulator, how awesome is that game? Because I know you're a flight sim guy. How awesome is Microsoft Flight Simulator?
I've tried it once, and it's pretty... It is pretty awesome, but ever since within the past few months, I've just upgraded hardware, so new video card, motherboard, the whole bang. And so now I'm in the process of just, you know, it's like moving into a new house. It's like you have to set yourself up again with whatever you had, and so I have to start, I have to set up my flight simulator again. Mostly, I've been doing a lot more DCS World, which is like combat flight sim. So it took me like God knows how many hours. I'd say like 4 or 5 hours just to set up BF-18's key bindings and settings in VR. All
right.
Even on like a 3070 is just a lot of tweaking just to make sure the frames didn't drop and it'd be like smooth on VR.
I just got a text from the spouse that says pizza and 10, wrap it up. So I have to get to your question.
Yeah, that's
Zachary.
Pretty much it. It's just nothing much. I guess going back to conventions now, I went to PAX East almost a month ago, almost got COVID. Thankfully, it all turned out negative, but, you know, people...
Were people wearing their masks and following the guidelines? Huh.
Yes, there were a lot of mask wearing. You couldn't even eat anywhere you wanted to. You had to eat in designated areas. But I guess, like, people are saying, like, you know, there was a story about one of the PAX enforcers who basically, quote-unquote, died of COVID. But based on what I heard about that case, it doesn't, you know, unless they examine through autopsy, like what actually happened, it's really hard to speculate that someone died of COVID. Maybe COVID was there and it was another contributing factor.
Okay,
but it could be something else. Like this person also had like comorbidities.
Well, I don't like, you know what? It's really tragic what happened, and I don't want to speculate further. Like it happened.
No, I know. I don't want to speculate. Yeah. And that's why, you know, people are jumping to the conclusion that, you know, because a PAX enforcer died of COVID, that maybe they should rethink the whole notion of having conventions entirely.
The problem
because
is,
now they can be done virtually.
The problem is you can get COVID going to the grocery store. You can get COVID going to riding the bus. You can get COVID at your workplace. Like it's this weird thing where society has just decided COVID is over, but COVID hasn't decided it's over. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You have to look out for yourself right now. And I kind of wish I could get another shot, but whatever. It is what it is. But Zaku, what did you get to play anything at PAX East? Like, is there any games we should be looking out for?
That Ninja Turtles one.
Oh yeah.
That was that retro one. Otherwise, God, it's been like weeks ago, but mostly like, this PAX felt different because it felt more open, and like less dense than previous years. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that
makes sense, though.
Yeah, no, of course, it's like the first PAX in like 2 years. So, yeah.
Well, it's kind of
like trying to get back.
It's probably laid out a little different, you know, kind of like Darksoccer was saying, with the pinball thing.
And that's it's not only that; it's like there's like whole sections where there would have otherwise been other rows of vendors that were just like blank. And, you know, that helps with the spacing and whatnot, but it felt different because, you know, not many vendors of the past were there. And so, you know, I guess it's due to the fact that people are slowly going back to conventions. Yeah. I know myself, the next one for me will be Otakon in the summer. But, you know, as it stands right now, it's basically the whole pandemic was a shock to anyone who did conventions on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically like getting punched in the gut, and then you're writhing in pain on the floor trying to catch your breath, and then 2 years later you pick yourself back up again and try. knowing to watch out for getting punched again, which in this case, COVID.
Well, Zaku, I hate to end on a negative note, but I have to for time. It's so good to hear from you, though. I'm glad you're doing well, and thanks for being here tonight.
All right. Yep.
All right. You
have
care,
a good one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All
right. I'm going to sneak in one more call here because I see someone else waiting in the green room. Hi, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, it is the one and only. It is Ranma.
Ranma, it's so good to hear from you as always, but you know I have to make it quick. I'm sorry. What's on your mind, buddy?
All right. I'm going to make this quick as you want, but for the next couple of minutes, I'm going to take y'all back. I'm taking the show back to the roots of OLR. I'm talking Bimani and DDR because they just opened up a brand new Dave & Buster's in my neighborhood, in my town. So me and a friend, we decided to go and play and see if we still had the right stuff.
And how'd that go? Getting old sucks, doesn't it?
No, I fell off the dance pad. I rolled to the side, and I was just laughing for 30 seconds straight.
At least you had fun.
At least you had fun. You didn't actually hurt yourself, it sounds like. You're good enough to call in and all that.
At least you didn't break your toe kicking the wall.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that, but yeah.
But it was more like, you know, I played DDR at a con about a couple of months back, you know, and when I got off the machine, I was like, I'm getting too old for this. But me and my friend, we decided to play, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put myself through these paces and see if I still got it. And we were mostly doing stuff from Fifth Mix, and we did three games, and we were taking turns with other people. I do not remember all of the songs that we did, but for the very last song, she says, we're going to push ourselves. And I'm like, what do you mean push ourselves? She pulls up max 300.
Oh,
I'm just looking
no.
at
her.
I'm no. like,
I never did max 300 except once.
I was like, get 911 on standby.
You know what? They need to make a version of DDR called Bitch, I'm 40. And it's just DDR Oha Sta, the kids version from back in the day. And it's DDR Bitch, I'm 40. Oh, that and the Spice Girls.
Rob, I agree. I'm like, we need to have DDR for the grown folks. That's what we need.
It's beginner mode, my friend.
Grown folks revolution. That's what we need.
Grandma, I'm so sorry. I have to let you go so we wrap the show. But any other quick thoughts for us tonight?
I was acknowledged by George Takei at the Japan Day Parade on
I
Saturday.
I saw that. You know what? I try not to get into the whole celebrity culture thing, but God, it feels nice sometimes. It really does.
Yeah, it was. It made my day. What can I say?
Sally O'Malley DDR edition. Y'all are... Wait till OLR's 30th. Rama, my friend, great to hear from you as always. Take care. Anime right. Jam Session. Listen to it. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Why did I say bye? I don't know. All right. I meant to say bye, everyone. Okay. Yeah. It's about time for... I can't find the right button. There it is. Okay. We're going to wrap up. We got to wrap up. Thank you so much for being here tonight and listening to Orange Lounge Radio. If you enjoyed what you heard here at the show, tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word. We are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices to put out on air. So a nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or whatever you use to listen to this podcast, Google Play, Spotify, I don't know. I really appreciate it. Really appreciate that. I did see that Bobby. Bobby is 29 again. A very happy birthday to Bobby Black Wolf. A little belated. I forgot to embarrass him on his show because we got onto another topic and I have the memory of a turtle. So happy belated Bobby Black Wolf, and I hope everything went well. And I'll see you at Dragon Con in a few months. That's it. Let's go around and give everybody's final thoughts. Darkstalker, your final thoughts tonight.
The survivors aren't being salty little bitches tonight. I drink their tears like in my coffee.
All right, have a good stream.
Thank you.
Take care.
I'm popping out now.
All right, yep. Loki, your final thought tonight.
My final thought is I don't want to go back to work tomorrow.
I know, I hear that. My final thought is I know there's supply chain issues or whatever, but why is everyone out of everything? Starbucks was out of sugar-free syrup, which they only carry one flavor of sugar-free syrup now, which is a whole issue in itself. And Chipotle was out of rice today. It's just the world is ending. All right. But in all seriousness, I hope to see you again in 7 days for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. I'm sure we'll all catch you on our personal streams or our YouTubes throughout the week. I hope you all have a fantastic time. Happy gaming. Thank you so much for spending your week with us, or your Sunday night with us. Have a great rest of your week. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.